Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show improve. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
In this half hour, we want to hear from our audience. But first, I have another guest joining me on stage. Al Jones is the former Poet Laureate of Halifax. She is also an activist and a Nancy's Chair in Women's Studies at Mount St. Vincent University. She has spoken out and written extensively on violence against black women and girls. Hello, Al.
Good evening.
What are the stories you are hearing about violence against women and girls in Nova Scotia?
Yeah, so right now there's an international conversation really going on with Me Too, but often only some women are making that conversation. So I work a lot with criminalized women and girls, so women and girls that have contact with the law or are criminalized in other ways, like through the care system, in their schools, and their stories really aren't being heard at all. So some of the stuff you'll hear from very young girls, for example, I've had girls tell me, particularly girls that have been in the care system, that they were sexually assaulted at age 12 or 13, and it says in their files that they were street workers and prostitutes, and so their rapes weren't taken seriously. One girl told me that in her file it said, well, her body is very curvy, like an adult, and this was used to deny her report of being sexually assaulted. Young girls in schools have told me about their mental health not being considered. One girl told me, she came to me and she said, my teacher told me I'm a bully. And I said, what do you mean by that? And she said, well, you know, I got upset at school and I get angry. And the teacher told me I'm a bully and they basically told me I can't be in the class. And this was a young girl that was suffering abuse in her home. So rather than asking this young girl what was happening in her life, she was being labeled as violent and then pushed out of the school. So you hear these stories over and over again. A lot of the issues that we've been talking about on this panel, education, housing, these are things that particularly affect the bodies and the lives of black women who are living in poverty and then don't have any resources and are suffering from trauma either in their homes or the communities and particularly from the state. So when we're talking about Me Too, we're not talking about the state violence that women are experiencing in prisons, where we see black women being the highest growing rate of women being put into prison. And we know that women who are criminalized are victims of trauma, and they're not being part of this conversation. So it's not only that some women are being left out, we're also only talking about some kinds of violence and some kinds of power. But what we're not talking about is how, from the beginning of black women's existence in this country, black women's bodies have been raped. Black women's bodies have been exploited. Black women's bodies have been state property in particular ways, and that is still going on. And you're still seeing that today in the lives of women and girls.
You have a radio show where you talk to female inmates in Nova Scotia. Tell me a little bit more. You've touched on it, but tell me a little bit more about what they tell you about their experience.
So we talk to both women and men, but what the women will talk about is lack of mental health care. Lack of feminine hygiene products. So I don't know if you can imagine what it's like to be in jail and to have to bleed through your underwear because you don't have access to a tampon or a pad.
In Canada?
In Canada, yes. The solitary confinement issues. So even though that's been declared unconstitutional, women will talk about being in SEG. Women who are being SEG'd while they're pregnant. Women who aren't being able to see their children. So you have all kinds of violence that women are experiencing. And what's really beautiful about women is that they will speak for other women at great risk for themselves. So often they'll call in and they'll say, there's another woman here. and this is happening to her. And so we know that black women are entering the system more and more and more, that the rate is going up highest among black women who are often in jail because of things like driving the car for a boyfriend who's abusive and who told them he drives the car or else. Women who are involved in the drug trade who are being coerced in their relationships, who are being beaten or raped and then told to carry drugs. And those stories aren't making the news. They're being criminalized. They're being told that they're the ones that are wrong and that they're the ones that are the problem. And in fact, what's been happening to them is trauma, and there's no understanding of that. So we know that the justice system doesn't serve black women and girls or indigenous women and girls. And so what we're seeing is them being caught up more and more into these systems, having their children taken away from them because they have a record or because they're poor, and they're being accused of neglect. So I really think that we need to speak out about this. It's something that's very difficult for women to speak about, and even more difficult for black women, where particularly if we have to speak about men in our communities, that's difficult because our men also suffer from so much racism and so much incarceration, and we know that they suffer from violence, so then it's very difficult for black women to also have a voice on this.
So if you need help and you're a black woman, you're afraid that you're going to hurt your wider community, and if you're a mother and you ask for help, what happens?
Well, I mean, we are checked 3 times more than the police in Halifax. We know that our police in Halifax aren't serving the black community. So why do you think that you're going to be able to call the police? A woman has to make a decision about, does she want to invite that into her house if she's suffering abuse? And yes, also, if we know that black men are also going to be criminalized and seen unfairly, when our entire communities are called pimping communities or violent communities, and we know that this myth exists, that our communities are the most violent, you don't necessarily want to contribute to that as a woman, knowing that it's not, in the end, you're not going to get help, and you're also, what's going to happen is just that narrative is going to make the news, and people are going to say, see, black men are what we said they are, they're thugs. So as long as we live in a racist society that criminalizes black people, this is what we see, that we have a violence that's being done to us by the state, and when that violence comes into our homes and communities, we don't really have the tools to fight it.
And we make the point, we're at this heightened conversation now about violence and sexual violence against women, but we're still not talking about this in a wider way.
No, so we tend to sort of, and all women are subject to abuse. There's not being white, being rich, as we know from seeing the Me Too conversation, you can be the most famous woman in the world and suffer from sexual violence. So I'm not discounting that. But what I'm saying is that can't be the only conversation. And we can't only talk about sexual violence as taking place one way. Because black women also experience sexual violence in all kinds of other ways. So they experience violence in their schools in particular ways. We experience violence in the way our children are taken from us, and the way our parenting is critiqued, the way that we're seen as bad mothers, which has a particular sexual history for black women, and the way that black bodies move through space. So when black hair products are locked up behind the counter at Shoppers because black women are thieves, that's putting a particular criminalization onto black women's bodies that marginalizes our bodies and that makes us more vulnerable in other ways to violence. The way we move around our workplaces, the way our hair is critiqued, and you know, having natural hair makes you less professional. All these ways our bodies are judged, our skin is judged, our body is too curvy, it's too thick, you're like, why is your breasts out, you know, when you're trying to go to work and just wear a shirt and you're being critiqued. And what I'm saying is all these things are racialized violence as well, and we can't just talk about it as sexual violence, and we can't just talk about it as, okay, if your boss sexually harasses you, we have to say what happens. How does policing become sexual violence for women? How does going to school become sexual violence for black girls?
Because this starts, you make the point, this starts with girls just going to school, the way they are treated about how they dress.
Yeah, how they dress. They've talked about how they will express to teachers or to school officials that they're feeling anxiety or depression, and that's seen as attitude. So you're being bad rather than you're in need of help. Some of them have said that when they have these problems in school with racism, their homes get called and they go home and experience their parents being disappointed and angry with them, and they can't explain, this happened to me because of racism. So then they experience a marginalization in their own homes. So they're seen consistently as being bad, as being, you're acting out, rather than needing help or needing assistance or having something going on that needs a conversation.
What kind of reactions do you get when you talk about these things?
Well, I mean, I experienced racialized, sexualized violence as well. I was drawn as a monkey, you know, in a cartoon which has a particular history for black people, obviously a history of calling us savage, a history of calling us primitive. I spoke out when I talked about Sidney Crosby going to the White House and suggested that maybe he could take a stand. I received all kinds of messages like N-word written 12 times, death threats, suck on this part of my body, or a C-word. And this was constant. And it's not something that we're supposed to complain about. If we complain about it, we're just being sensitive. And if you do complain about it, there's nothing anybody can do. So a point I always make is if I play my music after 10 in my apartment, my neighbors can call the cops on me. But if a white man wants to send me a message telling me to suck his whatever, and I call the police, if it's not persistent and he didn't, you know, put my address there and make a direct death threat, well, then he can. That's his free speech, right? And in fact, the problem is me trying to stop him from having that free speech, not him sending me these messages. So there's all these ways that power is balanced. I'm being mouthy, I'm a bee, I'm all these things, and that makes me, because I speak out, therefore I'm asking for it. So you get the same kind of narrative you get around sexual violence being applied to black women who are outspoken, that you deserve it, you shouldn't be out there talking about race, you're just pulling the race card, so if white people want to attack you, well, that's your own fault. So when you try to speak about these things, you get a huge amount of violence directed towards you. And if you complain about that violence, you just get more violence.
I was going to ask you what has to change, but I think the answer would be everything. But where do you... how do you move forward? Not you, but the wider society. How does our wider society move forward so that you don't have to say... to point out these things?
Well, I think we're building and resisting all the time. I think about Harriet Tubman, who, you know, made multiple trips into the South to save children, brought them up to Canada to save black people. We have a long history of resistance. Viola Desmond in this community in Nova Scotia. I could list so many more women. Black women have had long histories of holding down our communities on no resources, on the little that we have, and sharing it with everybody else. So we know what to do. We are a resilient people. We are a resistant people. And we have consistently built communities that are spaces of love, that are spaces of survival, and that where we thrive in. So it's not that we don't know what to do. It's just that we're not usually being allowed to do those things to our fullest extent and our fullest humanity. So we have the solutions. The solutions are to give us the dignity that we have, to allow black women to live our lives in the way that we know how to live our lives, and to allow us to love each other, to allow us to care for each other, hold each other accountable in our communities, to allow us to do the work of raising our families, and to stop being so cruel to us all the time and interfering with us. And if people would stop doing that, we already have the solution. So... I know I'm not alone in this. I can look around this audience and see the faces of so many women in this room, and we just have to continue focusing on that, because the love that we have, the resilience that we have, can never go away, and it can't be taken from us.
Al, thank you for your voice. Al Jones is a former poet laureate of Halifax. She's also an activist and a Nancy's Chair in Women's Studies at Mount St. Vincent University. Stay with us.
Context of white supremacy. I just talked about that word community on the compensatory call-in this past weekend. In my view, just following counter-racist logic, you don't have a community if you can be placed in greater confinement, prison at any time, have your children taken from you, don't have access to feminine hygiene products. That does not sound like a community, and I just emphasizing that right from the beginning, having a correct framework, using correct words to describe what is happening, that is extraordinarily important in the business of counter-racism, especially applying counter-racist logic on the job, using correct words that accurately, logically describe what's happening, extremely important. Context of white supremacy, Gus T. Renegade, in for another broadcast. This is our weekly forum on neutralizing workplace racism. This, for sure, is not a broadcast for spectators. So if we have non-white people, black people, victims of white supremacy who are listening, if you are, number one, if you figured out some things that work well, that solve problems for you on the job, make sure that you get all of your raises on time. If you need vacation time, if you need sick days, if you need personal leave, you get it without a lot of hassle and rigmarole. You put in your time, you get your days off, no problem. You come back to work, great. How was your time off? You're feeling better if you had sick days. That's how things work. If you need a transfer, if you need to get a better office, if you need your furniture upgraded, no problem. Things happen. No issues. Looks like you're going to be able to put your feet up on the desk, enjoy your great cushy office and ever-increasing salary until you are ready to retire. If you are in that position, for sure, you should be one of the first to dial in the number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if you are a Black entrepreneur, let us know how your experience being self-employed has been. That is always appreciated. Third, if you are just having difficulties, if you're experiencing a problem and you would appreciate having suggestions, counter-racist suggestions for how you can perhaps go about addressing whatever concerns you're having on the job, definitely dial in, share what's happening, and, you know, we'll present our views. The number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. If you're not able to use the phone, you can always drop me an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. If you would like to write in your commentary, the email again, untiljustice@gmail.com. And you can write in. I'll keep an eye on my email and I can read your commentary and you can get suggestions. Or if you just have feedback, your own suggestions on what you hear on the broadcast that you want to write in, you can do that and I will read it on the broadcast. Quickly, before we get to some of the callers and people that already wrote in, we will not be doing the book club tomorrow. I am taking a self-care mental health day. We finished Wisdom of Psychopaths last week, and I'm still trying to figure out what the new book is going to be. I keep getting different suggestions and ideas. If LaRon Bennett Jr.'s, the late, great LaRon Bennett Jr.'s Forced Into Glory wasn't so long, that would be the book we're doing. Easy. We had Red Nevada volunteered to read. That book is just so long, and I'm a little hesitant about reading such a lengthy book that we would be reading for what probably be summertime by the time we get done, because that book is so long, and it's a biography. So I'm a little hesitant about that. I'm still trying to decide, but more than anything, I'm just taking a mental health day because it has still been a tremendous strain with the flood. And as I said, no timetable on when things will be back to normal, be able to move home. And that's just been stressful and unpleasant. I've been very unhappy about that for a myriad of reasons. So I'm taking a mental health day tomorrow. Just in addition to my grumpy spirits, I do want to say thanks to listeners who've been very supportive and folks who've written in, messaged in, invested in the program tremendously, and just sent in their encouragement and concern since the flood and us being back on the air and everything. I went downstairs, my temporary housing here, went downstairs, I went to the lobby, and they put all of the packages, Amazon packages and other deliveries, they put them next to the concierge's office, and almost everything in the lobby was for me. I was absolutely stunned, very, very humbling, and very, very grateful to folks who tuned into the cows. I hope the broadcast has been, continues to be worthy of your time and energy, but I was very touched, a little bit happier with all of the unpleasantness I've been dealing with. That did add a nice spot to the day. Wanted to make sure that was acknowledged. Very, very grateful. Thank you. Thank you. To workplace racism. Number one, if we have folks, listeners, if you have experience using a recording device on the job specifically, that would be grand, because that I feel like has came up more, at least in conversations that I've had with victims of racism on and off the air, in terms of recording, using it, situations where it might be beneficial to have a recording. If we have folks who have experience using that, I think Emmy, even last week, she was inquiring about specific types of devices. So if we have folks who have experience, or if you even if you, it would be even better if you have already established a code, like you've been using it enough that you're comfortable. So you already have the device that you use, where you keep it at, the circumstances when you're up. I think John is about, oh, let me get, boop. Like, that would be great so we can kind of hear how some people apply that on the job. I think that could be helpful for some people. Second, Mr. Fuller, he often talks about documentation on the job. Emphasize that on this broadcast as well. He was saying that one thing that can be helpful is noting unequal treatment on the job. So let's say, and this situation just came up today, I was speaking with a listener. Let's say you get an injury, whatever it is, and you go to the doctor and the doctor says, well, you need to take a week off from work. You know, you've got some health concerns, take a week, take it easy, and then you can go back to work. And your job says, oh, no, 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 we don't do work from home. You can take one day, but after that, you know, you have to head back into work. We're not going to honor that. Okay. 5-6 months later, it could be a year, 3 years later. Peter, white man, he slips on the ice and says, oh, I'm going to have to work from home for the next week. No issues. Well, wait a minute. That's the sort of thing that you want to document and be like, well, okay, on February 28th through, you know, whatever it is, March 3rd, March 4th, Peter was out, worked from home, said he injured his ankle. He had a doctor's note or didn't write down as much detail as you possibly can. Then the next time around, if it's you or if it should be another non-white person and they say, hey, you know, I got such and such an issue and I need to work from home for, oh, no, no, we don't do that. That's not our company policy to do work from home. He says, well, wait a minute. Now, back at the beginning of 2018, around February, Peter might not even be working here, but Peter Jackson was working and he got to work from home for a week. So what's the difference between Peter Jackson's situation and my situation or Nancy's situation, whomever the person happens to be, that can be very effective. I've heard Mr. Fuller on more than one occasion talk about how he has seen where that radically shifted everything, where they were about to fire Nancy and everything. And then after that got brought up, Nancy got to work from home for a week, where he's seen that happen repeatedly. We're just having that information. And he emphasizes you would have to have the details. So if you're there, you want to be paying attention to that sort of thing. Even if you don't make us think about it right then, you don't need to go and, you know, protest. And I can't believe Peter got this time off. You can just document that this did happen. Peter was allowed to work from home. And then a month, a year down the road, maybe that can be useful. Third, and discretion was a part of this. The person that I was talking to, they had the CEO send out a memo saying that basically it would be up to managerial discretion to decide whether or not, you know, we're going to allocate you the permission to work from home. That's another one. That's why I talk about reading policy and procedure so that you can see if they have in their sick policy, if they have outlined, okay, you can work from home, you can't work from home. This is the procedure. This is the criterion for working from home. If you need a doctor's note or whatever it is it up to discretion? Is it something where the manager has to sit back and adjudicate on a case by case basis? Get all that information ahead of time, and then you can see how that policy is actually applied. Are they following it according to what's in the policy and procedure, or is it just, you know, racism, white supremacy? We will get to applying or failure to apply counter-racist code. I've been asking about that for a while. That'll come up later on. We had a couple people who wrote in. I'll make sure I share their commentary, and then we'll get to the phone line. So the first person that wrote in, it's the black female. I've noticed that there are two new books that the high school students at my school are reading in their English classes. I see students carrying the books around and even discussing them in between classes. Also, I've overheard suspected racist teachers talk about how much the students love the books, and some of the least expected students, aka black male students, have been engaged, are reading the book with enthusiasm. I thought it would be a good idea to study these books to get an idea of what is being taught. Uh-oh, now see, this is what I mean. Sounds like this could be other suggestions for the book club. I was able to find both audiobooks and I listened to both. One book is called Dear Martin by Nick Stone, and the other is called The Hate You Give by Angie Thomas. Both authors are black females. I found the parallels between the books interesting, and I suspect the teachers using this book could be practicing racism. Both books have sexually explicit content and language and use the as nigger repeatedly. I was thinking about how teachers go about reading it? Do they say nigger and the explicit language? Overall, I found that both books involve teens who are from non-white communities but attend private schools that are majority white. Both teens are also in tragic arrangements, of course, and this seems to be a major point of emphasis in both books. In Dear Martin, the main character talks to his cousin about potentially dating black girls, but completely throws away the idea after stating that they know no black girls outside their family members and would not know what to do if they saw one. In The Hate U Give, the main character is dating a white boy that acts like he is black. When the main character describes him, she uses the words that equate to perfection. Anyway, this is not really workplace related. This seems more like book club, even though I think this person does work at a school. At any rate, just be mindful of things that are happening on your job. That is always important. I'll think about these books for the book club. Second person that wrote in, this seems more workplace racism in a traditional sense. I am a claims rep for an auto insurance company, black female. I'm going to get straight to the point. My female boss, who is married to a black male, only picks at me and not my white male coworker. We are somehow only supposed to spend no more than 5 minutes with a client, which is impossible, but she watches me. She watches me and times me. Once I go over 5 minutes, for instance, at the 5-minute, 1-second mark, she interrupts, starts badgering me, and then starts talking stuff about the client if they are black. Two, in regards to my boss and black clients, if a black person calls in, speaks clearly and articulately, she starts sighing and rolling her eyes, calling them dumb and slow for simply sounding black in tone. Three, in regards to the sounding black tone-wise, my coworkers who are non-white, quote-unquote Hispanic, and white people will delay a black person's claim because they find it funny to make up stories about a black person's life based on how they sound. For example, I had a client who was married and owned 2 successful businesses in New York City call in for a claim. They sent an appraiser out, and the white appraiser came back with some outlandish story about the client's life. He inspected the vehicle, but stated the reason why the vehicle was damaged was because the black female client was a side piece and the baby mama caught her man with her and destroyed the car. This clearly isn't true, since her husband was with her the whole time throughout the claim process, but the claim process took nearly 3 months to complete because the whites and non-blacks were enjoying all these made-up stories, made-up scenarios. Number 4, one of the white Hispanic adjusters, who perhaps is the laziest person on the team, what I was saying about words, in my view, you cannot be white Hispanic. You are white or you are not. Now, the person may identify themselves and say, oh yeah, I'm, white Hispanic. They might say that. This is going to be a racist suspect, someone who's classified as white, in my opinion. I think it adds confusion. Anyway, there's one white Hispanic, quote unquote, male coworker who is the most aggressive with it. The more codified I become, the more I realized it was calculated. While I was talking to my black coworker, he came around, interrupted the conversation. He was a distance away from me when he made a stupid joke and said he mistakes me for another white coworker who has white hair, is short, and super obese. We obviously look nothing alike, but he did this so he can touch me, which made me uncomfortable. He was not an arm's length away. He actually had to step and reach to touch me. I reported it to HR, and they sent an urgent email about keeping your hands to yourself. This predator has turned up the harassment, and I found out he was not the only one, but he is the most aggressive. Every day he sends someone to watch me. He will stand behind the wall and listen in on my conversations about a file client, then go into the system and erase my notes and take credit for it. For instance, this man is an adjuster, but he is only licensed in New York, but he will come around and ask about a New Jersey file, which he has nothing to do with, go in and take credit for my work. We had a fire drill for the whole building, and I saw some people who work in the building for other companies I normally see in passing. I chat with them briefly. We are not friends. A few weeks passed, and I saw the same people I generally see in passing, and they told me that a few males from my company were asking personal questions about me, which made them uncomfortable. I'm waiting for them to write the full witness statement for the details. This male coworker follows me in the parking lot and even adjusted his time to come in at the same time as me. He originally came in at 9. Now he comes in at 7:30 a.m. I would be waiting for the elevator at 7:30 a.m. to get to my job, and he would be standing on top of me, reach over me to press the elevator button. Absolutely no space, and then he would make jokes to make light of the fact that I'm uncomfortable. I once walked into my desk to see half-eaten chocolates spread on my desk. I keep chocolate in my desk, but I believe this man went in my desk and did this despite me, since I have been paying him no attention. I reported the incident, but they are still investigating. This man now comes around, and if my back is turned, he will stand there, clear his throat loudly, to cough loudly or walk up and down the aisles and huff and puff to get me to acknowledge his presence. I am to the point where if I'm dealing with a client that belongs to one of his files, I refuse to speak or deal with him so that he will leave the client in limbo for weeks to months, even though the file is ready to be paid. This man takes months to pay an auto claim because he is so busy following me around and watching me, and the only time he settles a file is when he is listening in on my conversation to try to take credit for my work. I'm not sure what to do after I get my witness statements and make a claim, as my white and non-black employees like to stick together and attack anyone who has a problem with one of theirs. The ramp up in racism, trying to confuse and deceive the victim, then coercing them to feel empathy for this person since he has a wife and children. I have to add the coughing on people and clearing of the throat gets worse when he sees me speak to another black male. The more codified I became, the better I became at picking up white and non-black people's sexual harassment tactics. Almost at every job I have had, I've been harassed by them, but did not realize it, since I was brainwashed to view them as victims who didn't know what they were doing. If any of the listeners have been through the same and have filed a sexual harassment claim against one of their coworkers, please help and let me know what to expect. Very clear in terms of what she is requesting. Folks have any suggestions, if you've been through this process in terms of filing a report about sexual harassment. I know we've had some of our listeners who've done this before, some to more successful outcomes than others, but I think some of the folks have dealt with this. One thing that I would say is, I think we've said this before in terms of unwanted touching or any sort of sexual harassment. I would take this extremely seriously, especially since you've noted an increase in the terroristic behavior, any sort of behavior that's stalking. You said he's like changing the time that he comes in so that he can be there at the same time that you are and be on the same elevator. We would not be on the same elevator. I wouldn't care what happens. This is someone that you've already got a report about sexual harassment. Whatever needs to take place, we would not be on the same elevator. We would not be in the same space together. Like, these things just could not happen. There would not be a scenario where he would be allowed to hover over me or in my space. I think I was talking about this with a different listener earlier today. She might be chiming in, but racist. And I really, really appreciated her writing in that she had been victimized. She had been subjected to this sexual violence before on the job, but she didn't recognize it as such because of the brainwashing or the brain trashing, really, that happens in the system of white supremacy. And that is lots of us as it relates to racism. But as you get a better understanding, counter-racist logic, you recognize, oh, wait a minute, I'm being mistreated here. That's what this is. And then you figure out what you want to do to stop that from happening permanently. But I would take it very seriously. We would not be on the same elevator. I would not allow this person to hover in my space if I needed to move or whatever needed to happen. The chocolates, I've talked about that, but Welsing moment. I've talked about before not having things on your desk, in your desk, and this is why. I suspect that this person, that their theory is accurate, that this race soldier went in her desk to get the chocolates or whatever. Particularly, I mean, if they're snooping around and taking credit for your work and doing all these other things, why would I think that they wouldn't go in your desk and rifle through? You know, if people are reporting to you that they're asking questions and such, certainly, I think you're right. They probably rifled through your desk and took the chocolates. I would not leave anything in your desk, nothing except work-related materials. Again, this is not my desk. This is the company's desk. So the work area that they allow you to have while you're there, I would not leave anything there but paper, their papers, their documents, their pens, their computer, all of their property. So if they want to rifle through their property, their documents, go ahead, no problem. But I don't have anything, nothing. I mean, not even peanuts. If you want to snack, nothing would be left in the desk. On the desk, the work area, nothing, and this is why. I think we've had, over the years, other listeners who've called in, and lots of sexual tackiness around having chocolates on your work area or work desk, especially for Black females. If we have listeners, if we have suggestions for... it seemed like it was so many different things in terms of the person taking credit for your work and then the sexual harassment and lots of different things. But I guess it seemed like what she said at the end, the sexual harassment, that being priority one. If people have suggestions about that process or based on what she wrote in, if you have any other suggestions for the myriad of difficulties that this caller is dealing with or listeners dealing with, then feel free. If you have your own situation you want to address, that's fine as well. The number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. If you have, I guess we should get this kind of serious. So if we have suggestions for the sexual harassment piece, we should do that first and then we can get everything else. So we have suggestions for the listener with the sexual harassment problem. No suggestions for the sexual harassment caller or listener, person who wrote in about that. Right on. I will ask about that again as we proceed, since I do.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Thomas in New York.
Yes. Good evening, Gus. Good evening to all callers. Sexual harassment is pretty clear cut. Every job I've ever had, it's not acceptable. It's so broad. I can't understand if you go to human resources, It causes lawsuits. This gets, once you put it in that you feel some type of way or something is going on, and nothing is done, then you could file a lawsuit. So every company knows that. Like, it's like, if they know about it, you know, if they didn't know about it, they could say, oh, well, we didn't know. If we knew, we would have filed. But once you put that claim in, I don't understand. How they could have the person still doing things around it. It's like they're not taking it serious. So I would go to the next step, you know, try to get a lawyer. And you already have a claim in with human resources. It seems like the person complained about the person harassing her, right?
Yes, I think she said they're still investigating her report.
Yeah, so they obviously haven't spoken to that person because... the number one thing they would say to that person is you stay away from that, stay away from her 100%, you know, 100 feet distance. You know, he's a white person. They might let him work from home for a few weeks while they get everything situated. But if you went to human resources and you still feel like there's harassment, I would go right back to them and say, listen, nothing's been done with this. And I'm thinking about getting a lawyer. And I see what happens then, because it's like if something happens to you. Once I was in the park and I fell down the steps, so I popped my knee, and I filed a lawsuit against the city, and 7 years later, I went to court, and I ended up losing because the park was able to prove that they had no knowledge the steps were all broken up in the park, even though they were broken up very badly. And it was no claims ever put in. If they could find it, they tried for 5-6 years to find the claim, and they just couldn't. So, I mean, and after that, I started calling 311 anytime I see something wrong, so that way if someone gets hurt, they know about it. It's something on the record. But as soon as you have something on the record with human resources about sexual harassment, normally things get handled immediately. I can't believe that it's still going on. So you have an actual lawsuit.
Appreciate that, Thomas in New York. I absolutely would document all of the, and if, you know, this is like, these are relatively fresh incidents. I would document everything that has happened subsequent to when you filed your report with Human Resources. So the elevator incidents, this schedule change, like whenever that, when you noticed that happened, where he started seeming like he was there at the same time that you're there, so you all are going in the building or getting to the elevator at the same time, the hovering and coughing at your desk or work area, whatever it is, the chocolate thing, even if you don't have any proof per se or any evidence that it was this race soldier per se who did the chocolate thing, I would document all of that with as much detail, dates, times. If you can remember exactly what he said, that's great, or as close to it as possible. But I would document as much of that as possible. And then you could submit that going back to Human Resources to say all of these things have happened subsequently. So it seems like, you know, whatever is being done to address this matter has not been effective at all. And however you want to proceed from there.
As soon as it happens, email yourself, and you have that record right away. You email exactly what happens. It has a time, date, and that's a legal document.
This might be another one that's good for a recorder if this person, because I think she wrote, when she wrote in, she was saying that he was, in addition to the coughing thing, he was making remarks when they were on the elevator, even though, as I said, we wouldn't be on the elevator ever again. But she was saying he was making comments on the elevator about how she was uncomfortable. This might be one where if you have a recorder handy, boop, you can record some of these remarks that have been made, and it'll be date stamped, time stamped, so you can show that he was saying these things after the HR report was filed. So that might be something as well. Do we have any other folks who dialed in with any suggestions for our female callers?
Hey, Gus, one more thing. I just wanted to add, you could also text yourself, because texting is also a legal document.
Great reminders. Use all of that wonderful technology. Other callers, any other suggestions for our female caller who's dealing with the sexual harassment on the job? Definitely check your policy and procedure several times over and see what they say about sexual harassment. And I would even quote some of that back to them if you go back to address Human Resources again with any of these more recent incidents, or whenever they finish the investigation. If it seems like it's taken a long time, you can even go inquire about that. But I would be very familiar with that section of policy and procedure on sexual harassment. Any other suggestions from listeners on this one, or folks just want to get to their own incidents?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Hi, this is the caller in Wisconsin. I dealt with a similar situation. In my experience, HR wasn't that helpful. I had documentation of everything that had happened. And they just sort of blew me off. It was my boss, and this person actually tried to follow me from the job in my car. And all they did was sort of refer me to EAP and basically stated that I had, you know, mental health issues because I was making up things. So my response would be, I wouldn't discourage her from making a sexual harassment claim, but I would definitely not have the expectations that the behavior would stop. You know, I know that's disheartening, but I wouldn't have those expectations. That's all.
Are there any things that you did personally or having that experience, which you would suggest in terms of these are things that you can do personally to keep yourself as safe as possible, knowing that HR is likely not going to be super helpful for a Black female under these circumstances?
Well, one thing I did was I limited my contact with this person. He was my boss, so I still had to deal with him. I limited my contact with him. I made sure that I communicated to him via email rather than in person, because that's where he would sort of slip his innuendos in person. So I limited my contact with him. I probably wasn't as codified as I could be. I became very hostile towards him, which actually worked because he was, that sort of startled him, and then he stopped doing the things that he was doing. I don't necessarily know if that would help in her case. I think it was just due to his personality that he kind of backed off then when I became very hostile. And then I figured out a way to transfer off his team.
I see. I think that's a superb recommendation about the way specifically of limiting contact to have email conversations with this person. So that way you're not having to have face-to-face dialogue and limiting the opportunity for him to make his terroristic comments or sexual remarks to you. I think that's great. And then also you got a record, a permanent record of the conversation. If he's saying anything incorrect or what have you, that's, you already got the file there in the response. So that's, I think that's great as well. We have any other suggestions? Thank you so much, ma'am. I appreciate that. Caller in Wisconsin. Did we have any other callers who had suggestions for our female listener who's having sexual harassment issues on the job?
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. This is Red in Nevada. The only suggestion, I don't have any suggestions about the sexual harassment part. I still learning about that and feel like the lesson that I or what I went through didn't go so well. But with the part about the harasser also taking her credit for her work, is if there's any way for, I'm assuming she's doing this work as maybe some type of a system or, I don't know, a spreadsheet, what have you, once she's done entering in the note, to maybe take a screenshot of it and email that screenshot to herself with the timestamp. So that way she would have maybe that proof to say that, okay, well, the notes, her notes were there at this particular time. And when you go back in there, and the harasser's notes are in there, but you can obviously, she would have maybe that might help as the proof. I guess that's all I wanted to add for that. And I'll mute my line just in case anybody else wanted to add anything. And I'll just speak later on my own information.
Great suggestions. Red in Nevada, use that technology screenshot. And that seems like the type of thing because I think some other people have talked about that before. I think our Black mom in Michigan, I think she was saying the same thing, that she was working on a job and people were going in and sabotaging her calendar or some other scheduling app that she was using. They were going in and changing it. I could be in error. I don't claim to be a tech wizard, but my general sense is that a lot of this technology, particularly things that where it's on a network, so like a lot of people can see the calendar or a lot of people can access these notes and what have you, is that there tends to be a digital footprint of the edits. So you can see like, oh, okay, so Red in Nevada went in at 5 p.m. and made these changes. And then at 5:30, Rodney went in and made these changes. I mean, you can, you know, generally track that now with the type of technology that they have. So whites would be able to see like, oh, okay, she went in and did the work. And then Fred came in and just changed and took all the credit. Like, I don't think white people are ignorant about that sort of thing. I think they can see generally what's happening with that. I could be in error, but yeah, that's just my general sense on what's happening with that sort of thing. Any other suggestions with the sexual harassment?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Well, my reason for replying is just to be a participant in today's program. But that particular subject, oh man, it ever since I've, you know, have been employed myself, you know, from the standpoint of employment that provides enough income to take care of some of the basics, I've heard about sexual harassment, especially the type involving black females, and it's such a very, very horrendous experience. And I can only see it from a male standpoint, but at best, I can say it's got to be a horrendous type of situation, whereas one would not have knowledge of what to do. There's no quote unquote book on it, on what to do about it. And probably if I talk too much, I'm going to say something that's not constructive on what comes to my mind on what to do, you know, such as having a some significant male figure or tough female figure to that maybe that's the time to go to the social environment with that person to let in so many untold means that this is not going to happen anymore. The extreme, of course, is to look for another job. In the case of sexual harassment, that might be the answer, but I can't dictate that for that person. But I've heard from black females, just like on this program, that even going to quote unquote human resources, whatever the hell that means, is not an answer, you know, and. I would say just like I'm trying to think of the gentleman who wrote the book on procedures that, and he says that well, if you're gonna wait to read my book when you get in trouble, then if reading my book is no use. I'm trying to think of his name. I can't think of his name right now, but I would apply that to also this problem, to have that in mind when one is seeking a job, that does nothing for someone who's already working, you know, to what I just said. But those who are planning to go seek another job or have the ambition to want to, you know, apply for someone else or another job to make plans about what to do about that problem in itself. Other than the policy and procedures and stay ahead of the process and be aware of it, that's all I have for right now, as far as what I can think, as far as the solution. But like I said, it does come to mind, which may not be constructive, but it does come to mind. If there is a time that I'm going to go to the Christmas party and Herbert is there, I'm going to show up there with somebody that is close to me, that cares about me, and that person, you know, that sort of thing, and so many untold means of words that we're going to confront this guy and let him know that it's not what to do as far as dealing negatively with me or this person that I care about. You know, I'm not saying this to the standpoint that it's something that I have not participated in myself. I have done it. Mr. Clark mentioned about that when he came on the program. So it is something that has been done, and there was a positive solution to it. But I wouldn't necessarily recommend that. That's all I have to say. It's just some thoughts that I'm sharing with the people on the program, and I'm not necessarily meaning that's something to do, you know, but, just, you know, try to follow your handbook and do whatever you can and within that realm. And if not, just find something else, you know, as far as employment. That's all I have to say for right now.
Appreciate that, retired firefighter in Florida. Definitely, I would encourage any of the folks, you know, dealing with this sort of thing. I think Emmy has talked about this before. She's called in quite a few times on this subject matter, unwanted touching and sexual harassment in the workplace. Just being really firm and, hey, bad, and particularly the elevator type situations, anything like that, or coming around the desk area, back up. And I mean, you know, you can phrase it and use whatever words that you need, but I am a big advocate. Same thing that we talked about before. If it's touching, I don't think she said that this person actually touched her, certainly after the human resources report. But any of that, where you're not comfortable, they're in your space, they're putting hands on you, they're saying something, anything, halt. This is not acceptable at all. Do not ever touch me again, or do not ever say anything like that to me again. And I mean, be super, super firm. I think Allison Manswell, she talked about that. Some of the other Black female guests that we've had on the program who talked about this exact issue, sexual harassment in the workplace. They said that that's one of the things that they just hugely advocate in terms of telling Black people, Black females specifically on the job, to be very, very firm, because that can make a big difference when they see that you are serious, you're not going to tolerate. And the suggestion that we gave before that came from Mr. Fuller, where he said going, if there's any sort of group meeting that they have, like a weekly basis or monthly thing or what have you, well, you can just you can take examples of some of the things that he has said or done. You don't have to use his name, and just say, you know, is this sort of thing acceptable to do in the workplace? You don't have to name anybody. You're not accusing anyone, just to get an example. There have been, and you can even throw in with all the Me Too conversations that have been going on and everything, I just want to be clear about what's, you know, acceptable behavior in the workplace and see what they say. Just again, sending that message, I'm very serious about this and I'm not going to tolerate this, and I'm going to be doing things on my own that it's not connected to or waiting on human resources at all. I'm doing things on my own to halt this permanently. Do we have any other suggestions? Sexual harassment piece? Any other suggestions?
Matt Weir?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, this is HV. Greetings, Gus, and greetings to the other listeners and callers. I agree with the firefighter, especially about looking for another place of employment. I think that all the advice that has been given should definitely be employed. I think it's great. And I don't know, because I actually turned off the internet for a moment, so I don't know if this was suggested, but just, excuse me, just all the, like, the last thing I was hearing you say, Gus, is just, you know, taking steps to make sure that, or to let it be known that, you know, this is not going to be tolerated, whether that be mace or a tactical pin or whatever it might be. Because to be honest, when I see him stalking her and going through all of that, changing his schedule and all of that to be around her, it makes me think, why is he, what is he so passionate about? What is he trying to accomplish? Is he trying to eventually rape her? Because to me, that's just an extreme measure to start stalking her. So that really petrifies me. So that would really make me want to, you know, take extreme measures, like looking for another job, getting a tactical pin or mace or some type of weapon or some type of something to, you know, protect myself. Because even in, once they do talk to him, given that he's already doing very extreme things like stalking her, what would he do next once they reprimand him for harassing her? So, you know, that's all I had. And thank you for taking my call. I'll mute my line.
Appreciate that, HV. Take it very seriously. The person who wrote in, it sounds like you are, you're doing your diligence and you wrote in and you already filed your HR report. Just take it very seriously. Any of that stalking, any of that sort of behavior, extremely seriously. Thinking, you know, Nicholas Cruz, Dylan Roof, that's the way that you should be thinking, like, very seriously. This is not something to minimize or take lightly. Like, this is a white predator, a white stalker, and you want to be the one who is maximizing to make sure that you're putting all of your time, energy to make sure that you're safe and that nothing, you know, happens, especially nothing with this guy. Take it very seriously. Any other suggestions?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to let the individual who's been dealing with this issue know that I'm very sorry for the situation. It's a very serious, situation as well to be compromised in that way when you're trying to make a living for yourself. But I will say that when it comes to this subject matter, it is my understanding that usually this is not the first occurrence for this type of behavior. This is tends to be serial behavior. So it may be of help to know that if you do file a report or go through HR, that you may be helping to add to the documentation of a pattern behavior, even if it doesn't aid in your specific situation. And the serial behavior for that individual, it may get them to either change your behavior, or your reporting may be the thing that actually brings their behavior to light for the rest of the other victims. So I just wanted to offer that piece of information. I'm in my line.
Right on. Appreciate that. The number again, if folks have suggestions, or if you have your own workplace issue that you want to address, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Folks have their own situation, and I encourage any of the folks, if you write in or if you call in to get suggestions or just to share about an incident, give us the update to kind of let us know how things evolve. That helps us get a better understanding of how racism, white supremacy works, what suggestions are productive, which ones are not so productive. Maybe we need to refine things, but that I always appreciate. I think some other listeners do as well. We have other folks who dialed in. If you have your own situation you would like to address, or if you have comments on what we've discussed thus far, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hello, my name is, you can call me Small Fry. I'm calling from the area of the world known as South Korea, and I've just finished my second teaching contract here, and I've been working with one other teacher from America, a white male. When I first got to the school, we introduced ourselves, and I told him where I was from, and he told me he was from Chicago. And he immediately, and I just left the classroom. I didn't engage him. And it was just a realization that made me think about how racism can travel across the world. And here I am on the other side of the world, and I'm still experiencing racism. So when I hear your definition of racism, white supremacy, the two most important words to me are global and dedication. And that's all I'd like to say for right now. I'll continue to listen in. Thanks, Gus.
Appreciate that. Live from South Korea, global system of racism, white supremacy. Global system. I think Stacy in the UK should be hanging out with us as well. Are you in with us, Stacy? Or are you just listening?
I guess.
Hanging out 2 a.m. Friday morning, actually 2:03 a.m. Friday morning in the UK. I'm a little too retarded to know the exact time in South Korea, but I know it's Friday morning over there as well.
11:03 a.m.
Not that far off. Did you have comments you wanted to get in, Stacy, or are you just listening for right now?
I did have a couple of comments. Sorry, I didn't hear the clips and the earlier conversations, so I can't comment. But I did just hear the tail end of what you were saying about updates. And I did want to say, actually, when you were away, I mean, I do like to listen to particularly workplace racism, but all of the programs at least more than once, because you hear things differently or you miss bits. So I try to listen to most broadcasts twice. But whilst you were away, I did go back and listen to a number of the workplace racism programs that Mr. Fox has uploaded onto YouTube. So probably dating back to his beginning of 2016. And I guess it's just a recommendation to others, because I did find it really useful to, even after that sort of period of time, to go back and listen and to hear what other people have discussed. And as you just said, you know, A, the updates and how each situation has progressed, not for entertainment, but actually for learning purposes, but also just to get a deeper understanding of sometimes issues, because as I said, you can sometimes miss things. But personally, I just found it really beneficial, and I'm just suggesting to others that they might also find it useful. And then by way of an update, many people know, I don't know if everybody knows, that I've been dealing with this grievance situation. I guess it's been going on for over a year now, the sort of start of it, in terms of me being accused of shouting at somebody who supported me on a project, and from there me saying I want it dealt with formally because I don't take accusations lightly. And without going into all of the history again, and if people listen to the previous broadcast, I'll be able to hear some of the detail. It's still going on. I've been kept out of the office since mid-September, because as well as the male accusing me of shouting at him, matters escalated and I've had people pushing past me and being physically violent, including the director of the unit. So I don't think I fed back that the initial grievance has been heard, and I'm going to miss out a lot of detail because I am still in, you know, the process is ongoing, but once it's concluded I will go into a lot more detail. But the initial grievance has been heard, and surprise, surprise, was not found in my favour. So I wasn't surprised, in the sense that I didn't go in there with the expectation that things were going to be done justly. I was keeping my expectations very, very low. However, it's at appeal stage, so I did have an appeal hearing this week. And essentially it would have concluded this week, other than the way that I think I handled that meeting. One good thing I've learned from the counsel is about asking questions. And I think I had about 30 questions lined up for him. Him being the person who heard the initial grievance, because the process then is that after that there is a chair that's appointed over the investigation. Makes his recommendations or his conclusions. I get that in writing, and then the appeal process is such that they then appoint a second person who is independent, in inverted commas, of the initial process, and they then hear and consider. Now, the process is so flawed, or rather biased against you. However, I went in there with about 30 questions, which made him squirm, to say the least. And it was interesting because my union rep seemed to be so anxious. I mean, she did see all the questions and what I was going to say beforehand. And when I gave them, the people in the room, including HR representatives and this previous chair, questions, he, you know, you could see that they reacted because they felt uncomfortable, which is a positive sign, if nothing else, based on my learning from the cows. If a suspected racists are happy, it's probably not that you're doing anything to challenge them. So anyway, one of my questions related to his consideration of the matter relating to the racist director, suspected racist director, who pushed past me several times. And he essentially said he didn't think it was a matter that should even come to a grievance. He didn't think it's serious, and etc. So I asked the question, what does he mean? Can he explain? And so he said, well, in his view, it should never have got that far because those are just everyday things that happen in terms of people, you know, walking around the floors and stuff like that, which is clearly not what happened. But anyway, and, you know, his aim was to just trivialise every single thing that I said. And so I pushed, you know, I probed him on the matter, and he said, you know, it didn't pass the threshold. So I said, I asked him if the organisation, because one of the things I pointed out was that the policy, and again, following what I've learned from the cows, the policy doesn't state that certain, you know, that it has to be certain types of behaviour. It gives you a list of behaviours that would be considered inappropriate under the code of conduct, but it explicitly states that it's not just, you know, it's not an exhaustive list. And therefore, you know, that it's not his premise that I should have never brought those issues to grievance just didn't make any sense. I sort of probed him further and I said, that's not in line with the policy. He said, well, it didn't pass his threshold. So I asked, the threshold. So then I asked, does the organisation have a threshold for intimidation and physical mistreatment? And so obviously he caught himself, or realised that he perhaps misspoke. But then he said, well, you know, I have it's my threshold. So I said, I'm very interested in understanding about this threshold in more detail. And, you know, again, he was squirming for a bit. And he kept using the word threshold, and he looked at the person who was chairing that session and said, oh, well, you know, his threshold. So I said, oh, okay, and he kept talking, and I just pointed out the use of the word threshold, and I parked it there because the chair has to hear and draw their conclusions. But and because of how I presented the matter and certain issues that came up during the discussions, I said that it was expected that it would conclude this week. It will now have to continue. He was the first chair was very keen to conclude the matter this week, but there were too many issues to discuss and not everybody could stay, so it will continue. But I guess in summation for this point, that it is surprising how racists and their networks will conspire and try and minimise even the most extreme behaviour. But I think he is going to, he realised that he did mess up when he used the word threshold. And I'll mute my line there, Gus.
Stacy in the UK, and for people who've been listening for a while, she's been dialing in for over a year now for workplace racism specifically, and some of the other programs, but this on a regular basis, weekly basis pretty much. This has been going on for over a year now. Like, when we've had conversations before about sometimes race soldiers, one of the things they'll do, they'll just waste your time and energy. Just do a lot of things to just waste your time, a process that should take a month. Caller wrote in about that today with the insurance claims. The insurance claim should take a couple of days to get filed. It takes 3 months because racists are having fun making up lies, racist little stories about you and your life. That standard, and then making on work with regards to the workplace specifically, when Black people file a report, I'm being mistreated. Folks are, you know, shoving me over in the hall and making false accusations against me or sexually harassing me. You make a report, then they take 5 years, 12. And we had that report in Oregon right down the road from me where Black people on the job had filed a report of workplace racism. It had been 12 years and they didn't even render a decision. Time and energy to just wear you down. And then, not found it. Shouldn't even got this far. You wasted the court's times with this process anyway. Outstanding job asking questions frequently. That's going to be one of the few options that you can consistently employ on the job to be able to ask questions. All of us should be working to get better at asking questions. And in my view, you know you're doing a good job if white people do not look comfortable or happy when you are calmly, seriously asking your questions. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments on what has been discussed thus far, or if you have your own issues, proceed. Did we have other folks who dialed in who gave suggestions, who had their own situations that they wanted to address?
I'm not in a good area. This is Red in Nevada. I'll be able to chime back in a minute.
Oh,
have you heard?
Appreciate that. Heard multiple folks. Yes, sir. Thomas in New York.
Okay. I heard someone who probably talked right before I did. If you want to take them first.
You have the floor. Go ahead.
Thank you. The caller from that called in from South Korea. You know, I find that's one of those games that white people play. Now this is a workplace racism story. It actually jogged my mind, but I used to work at a field office for a construction company, and it was a litigation behind the site, and they needed someone to manage the file so everything would be, you know, court worthy. So the guy who I worked for, he was an outright racist, and I was not codified then. The time frame of this was around the time when Obama gave that keynote address at the Democratic National Convention. So it was really like around that time. That I remember him making a lot of comments about that. But either way, he called the black guy he was doing business with and shooting, he called him a nigger. And I decided that was my last straw. And I went to the boss and I complained, you know, and I told him about some of the things that I had to do that I didn't feel like was part of my job and things of that nature. And, you know, after the site, you know, the project ended, right before that, I found another job. So I kind of knew they weren't going to keep me. But one of the things he used to say to me all the time, he said, man, I feel the safest in a black neighborhood. He said, all white people know they're safe in the black neighborhood because they know that black people, first, they're going to think you're a cop. And second, they're not going to do nothing to you because they know the cops is going to investigate it. So he said he felt that way. And I really believe that they all feel that way. So when they say something like that, that's just them practicing racism themselves. My own story this week, since I started this new job, one of my responsibilities, as I told you, is to go and get this fruit from the food stand. They give me $60 every day. I go to the food stand, I get blackberries, raspberries, blueberries, you know, two pineapples, two melons, either cantaloupe or honeydew or one-in-one, apples, oranges, tangerines, whatever they got there, kiwis. But either way, when I get it back, I have to prepare it for the office. And the guy whose job I took, he got promoted, and he used to do this. So that's why this is part of the responsibility. There's one kitchen in this office, and I get bombarded every morning, you know, at this time. You know, everyone's supposed to not be in that area to let me do what I have to do. But, you know, with no regard, I keep having to move, you know, in the middle of what I'm doing. It's just, I just find it to be, you know, white supremacy. I'm the only black male other than, well, there's an African brother that works there. And there's a black female who's the receptionist, who's sort of been, you know, very instrumental in keeping me abreast of what's happening. But what they like to do is they like to steal the fruit before I put it out. And I don't want to be put in a situation where it looks like I didn't go and spend $60 worth of fruit because somebody said, oh, I'm going to take this orange and I'm going to take this apple. You know, it's only a certain amount I buy. So I just find that to be white supremacy. And I make my line. Thank you.
I could totally see that. And this is one where I could see some people just saying, well, oh, he's practiced or he's just being paranoid. You're just trying to make everything about race. Nobody is going to accuse you of, you know, stealing money or fruit or both, you know, just because somebody came in and got it. I could totally see that sort of thing happening where when you just one or two white people come in and eat a banana and an orange or whatever, and they go off and then, man, Thomas, the fruit tray looks a little light today. You sure you didn't pocket $20 and just try to get over? I totally could see that sort of thing happening on a job to a black person anywhere in the world. Absolutely. Under the system of white supremacy. Did any other folks who dialed in with, I think I heard somebody dial in simultaneously or spoke up simultaneously when Thomas began speaking. Did we miss someone?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. I actually have had two instances this week at work. One was I was performing a task. I'm actually working with somebody new, and I'm actually new to some of these tasks. And they tend to be sarcastic. They tend to be condescending. And there was something new that I had not engaged with before. So I asked them, well, how does this work? And they told me, well, it's not rocket science. So I asked them, I said, are you calling me stupid? They said, no. I said, I think you're calling me stupid. And then I walked off. And they came later during the day and they apologized and said that they will not call me stupid. And, you know, they were just trying to help me out, but I would not consider that help. And I had that conversation recorded. And then the next day we were going to operate some equipment. And they asked me, they said, hey, are you sure you don't know how to operate this? I said, yes, I'm sure I don't know how to operate this. I said, well, it's kind of easy. All I have to do is just get in there and just, you know, just try it out. And I said, I'm not willing to put myself in that position. And they said, what position? I said, the position in which if someone were to ask me if I'm certified to operate this, I'm not certified. And I said, actually, you are certified, and you just damaged some material over there. And that's another position I'm not willing to put myself in because I don't want to damage some material and someone finds out that I'm not certified to operate this equipment. And they bowed their head and they walked off. And those two incidences happened back to back concurrently. One thing that I gathered from those two scenarios is that advocating for yourself can be something that can take practice. And I've actually been practicing in small ways. You know, I might be out at the grocery store and someone say, hey, you want to buy some cookies? And I'll just look them straight in the eye and I'll say no. And I'll just keep going about my way. But that's just something I just wanted to share with the cause of those two things that happened with me at the job. And I'll mute my line.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much. I think we've had over the years, we've had a number of Black people who have talked about white people encouraging them to do something where they're going to get in trouble on the job, doing something that's a violation of company policy and procedure. In this case, kind of encouraging, egging you on. Yeah, go ahead, hop in there, try it out, give it up. No, you're not certified. Knowing they probably got video cams. I'm like, oh man, it looks like Johnny was down there operating the machine. Is he licensed? What? Oh yeah, that's going to be a write-up. Got it. And then bang, we got that, your personnel file. You know, you can't have anybody hopping on the equipment and riding around. You know, this is not joyriding. This is not, you know, an amusement park. We got serious rules. And then we had equipment damaged, and he might have been even trying to get you on that. So then the equipment that he damaged earlier, he could just blame that on you. But like, oh yeah, he was down here riding around on the machine. I don't know what, he's not even certified. I don't know, he might have, you know, hit the machine or something. None of that. We've encouraged that before. That's a reason why I say read the policy and procedure. You know what your duties are. You know what is a violation of policy and procedure. So you already know. This guy's trying to set me up. This guy's trying to get me messed up. I don't get my raises. I don't get my promotions. I'm good. Thank you. Appreciate it. Going about my business. Great job. That's going to be part of your counter-racism at some times, because that'll be the act of racism, just them coming up looking like they're trying to be cool and friendly, and we're all chums here, but they're just trying to do something where it's going to eventually put you in a position where you could get in major trouble. Excellent job, sir. And I think the mail caller from South Korea, no less, who dialed in, who said just getting a better understanding and being in tune with counter-racist logic, he could sense when the instructor was about to do something racist, and then it happened. I think a lot of times just following logic, being observant, a lot of us, you can catch things, you'll see it before it happens, and have a better understanding of what you want to do in terms of how to respond. Other folks dialed in, if you have commentary you wanted to share, if you have a hand up, line should be open.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello again. Thank you. This is Red in Nevada. Thank you for taking my call. And hello to everyone who's on the line listening. The observations that I had this week, continue from the last couple of weeks, the white woman who I thought was, you know, a suspected racist, probably a full-on racist. I found out a little bit more information about her, but the good thing is that the first thing is that she doesn't bother to speak to me anymore, doesn't look at me or anything. So I feel like I finally came across to her as if I'm not willing to, you know, just put up with her calling me anything or willing to even really speak to her. So I found out from a Black coworker that I don't think they necessarily, you know, are friendly with each other, but the black coworker, the person is pretty friendly. She speaks to everyone. She was speaking to this suspected racist white woman, and she had told me that for whatever reason they were talking about politics and the suspected racist. She was like, oh, I think that Trump is doing a good job. He's doing everything that he possibly can. And all that. And of course I just implied the, you know, And I didn't even bother say, you know, I don't discuss politics, because it was more like she was just telling me a story, but I did not necessarily add to it. But I know the main thing that I do really focus on with this job, like I've said before, I really don't try to speak. If I do, it's more just asking a lot of questions So I just thought that that was interesting. So it's like, kind of, you know, it kind of makes sense. It's like, you know, if you, I don't know, just because somebody supports Trump, of course, that doesn't make them racist. But just with her little, the background that she has, I wouldn't be surprised if she is a racist. The other thing is that I had spoken before about these different extracurricular groups at my job. And one of the groups, the Black or the African American group, they had some information that they were passing out, and we were supposed to look at the information. And with my in the training room that I'm in now, they do have some seasoned employees helping out, and there's one white woman, one white man. He's a younger white man. He doesn't seem like he's more than 30 years old. And when they were when we got this information, because I was out of the room, and so what is this information about? And he had such a look of disgust on his face, and he even had like his almost like a shudder, like, you know, like when somebody like kind of shivers when they're cold, he kind of did that same movement. He was like, it's, and I don't even know why we have to do it. And I kind of, and he said this in front of, like, I'm standing, you know, a few feet away from him. And he did this in front of other, there's a few other Black people around. And I'm the only one who caught it. And again, I still feel like I'm not, maybe I did do the right thing. I didn't say anything to him, but it just really, of course, caught me off guard. Not saying that I expect anything, you know, anything different. I fully believe, you know, racist man, racist woman, racist child. So I just thought that that was interesting. And when we had to go over the information, I was just watching him, and he seemed really disturbed, like, you know, really fidgety. But then like an hour later, there was a Black female. We were actually outside of the training classroom or the training room, and a Black female was walking towards where we were, some of us were standing. He was like, "Oh, I missed you." And it wasn't necessarily like a cowbell type of thing, but I just thought that that was interesting, where it's like, you know, it helped me. It definitely helped me to fully understand that racists can have particular Black people that they can get along with and still, you know, be disgusted, visually disgusted, and physically disgusted by, you know, Black people as in total or whatever. I guess that'll be the last thing I have to share this week. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Appreciate that, Red. Great. That was music to my ears, as they say, when the suspected race soldier was, Trump is doing a great job. I think he's doing all it. Four more years when she was doing all that. And you just continue with the day. Spectacular. I hope more people, I mean, you don't have to do that per se, but the main thing is that is not debate time. You should not be pulling out your index cards and Trump is a white supremacist and blah, blah, blah. No, like, not on the job. As little as possible. They are just talking and doing what have you. You can just make a mental note of it. For those of you, again, who use your recorder, okay. And moving forward with our day. With the second one, great job being observant and just even seeing his nonverbal communication of white supremacy, racism, his disgust with everything, just paying attention to more details, perhaps, that would not have stood out when we were all a little bit more confused about racism, white supremacy. And I think that's especially important, your commentary about how he could be disgusted on the one hand with, you know, having to do this. He's a white man and I have to be subjected to this in the system of white supremacy. And then on the other hand, he can come back and be pleasant to another non-white person. I think this often confuses a lot of us. So we're like, well, maybe I thought the person was racist, but then they're being nice to me. Or it'll be just another non-white person. Maybe it's not us. We see them being nice to them. So we'll think, well, maybe they're not racist. Maybe they were just having a bad day. No, racist white supremacists, they can be nice to one or five niggers when it suits them, and they might even, you know, really enjoy that nigger's company, but they are still racist man, racist woman, racist child. Very important that we not forget or minimize that. Very important. Other folks dialed in, if you have commentary on any of what we've heard thus far, or if you have your own workplace situation that you would like to address, feel free. In fact, just because Red brought that up, I did have a different report. Someone emailed this to me before today's broadcast. This happened down in Florida. Lots of our listeners down there. Tampa woman says, monkey with noose, racist note left on her desk. Just paying attention and remembering what Red said about politics coming up in the workplace. A Tampa woman says she was the target of workplace racism, and now Hillsborough County deputies are investigating. And Solaris says she ended up walking out of the room. The next day, she walked into her office to find a monkey with a noose around its neck hanging from her chair, along with a note reading, "You are getting deported back to Africa, nigger, and that will make America great again." The bottom of the note was signed, "Whites for Trump." She found another note on her computer that read, "Nigger bitch." I think we heard that at the beginning of the broadcast in Canada. I had 18 emotions going through my mind. I was shocked, but most of all, I was hurt, Solar said. She said she asked her coworkers if they knew who did it, saying, "Is this a joke? It isn't funny." She immediately reported it to her boss, who she said contacted the general manager. I'm going to stop there. It's a little bit more if you want to read it online. I'll post it on Facebook. But the two main things, first and foremost, we are not getting into heated, escalated arguments where you have to go walking out of the room in disgust. That should not be happening on the job. I don't care what they're talking about. If they're talking about the shooting in Florida or wherever the next white person decides to go shoot up someplace, I don't care what the subject of conversation is. This is not the time. That's not what you applied to get a job for. That's not how you're getting your paycheck every other week, going in and having political discussions about what President Trump is doing and how we can make America great again. If they want to volunteer their opinions on these matters, fantastic. You can copy what Red just told us about. But other than that, keep your opinions to yourself. I wouldn't even be talking to other non-white people on the job about any of these issues on the job or after hours. The second thing, when the retaliation came, the monkey and the noose and all that stuff, when she says she had her emotions going in 18 different directions and she was hurt, again, these are core things that I hope get across on workplace racism, where it's managing. We're humans. You're going to have emotions about all this. Nobody wants to have a gorilla put on their property, calling you a nigger and all this other stuff, and a nigger bitch and all that. Nobody wants to experience that. But understanding racism, white supremacy, these are not my friends. These are not my homies. These are racists that I work with. These are racists doing what racists do. This is not monkey business. This is the business of white supremacy. So I'm not surprised. I'm not hurt. I pull out my phone. Click. Click. If you need to call, if this is call to attorney, call to parents, whomever supports you on your counter-racist team, if you want to make a report, whatever your procedure is, but you're just going through your code for how you respond. It's not, "Oh my God, I'm so sad and I can't believe this. And was it Bill? I thought we..." No, that's not the thought process at all. And I think the quicker that you can get to that point, these situations, you don't have all that emotion. You have a lot less stress and you can be a lot more codified and effective in how we respond to these type of situations, which are going to happen. You can bank on it. Other folks have suggestions, or if you had your own situation you wanted to deal with, the number again, 641-715-3640, and the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Again, if you have, if we have folks who have a code about how they use their recorder, that would be great. Be grand to get, you know, more explicit details about how people have kind of codified efficiently how you do your recordings on the job. And then if you have your own situations, if you figured out great codification or if you have problems, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Sorry.
Oh,
Let's get the female caller first.
Oh, thank you. This is the caller in Wisconsin again. I typically, as to the recorder question, I have one of those sort of spy pin recorders, and I've set it up to be voice activated, so I just keep it on throughout the day. Since it writes, nobody really pays attention to it. So I frequently take it with me to any and all meetings when I have to discuss something with someone at their desk. It's always on me. It's always either in my pocket or it's out when I'm taking notes. I usually make a big show of taking notes so it doesn't appear like I'm recording. My policy and procedure actually does say that we can't record, but I spoke to a lawyer, and because this is a single-party consent state, the law would trump whatever's in the policy and procedure, so I just record anyway. So that's my codification around the recorder. As far as workplace racism, I've been watching, I've actually been very observant and watching how racism is practiced against a non-white Indian male at my job. And this non-white Indian male is not, he's not an immigrant. He was actually born here. He's very white identified. And I've noticed that one of the architects makes it a consistent effort to always denigrate him or, you know, ridicule him. And usually he'll do it, he'll turn around and he'll give me praise at the expense of him, which is causing some conflict. Yesterday we were in a code review for this non-white Indian male. And so the non-white Indian male was showing us some database work that he had done. And I said, oh, I'd like to see the stored procedure. And the architect says, well, you know, he just copied and pasted it. If he had to write it from scratch, we'd all be in trouble. And then he starts laughing and he looks at me with a big grin like I'm supposed to laugh, you know, laugh with him. And I just sort of looked at him and I didn't say anything. You know, I didn't smile. I didn't do anything. And the next thing you know, this white architect is bringing out his phone and he's showing me his niece and just me his niece. And I'm like, okay, I don't understand what this is other than racism. Are you trying to sort of hide your racism? I think it's very interesting because this non-white Indian male has sort of taken on this persona and that he ridicules himself now. And I asked him, I said, well, why do you do that? And he said, well, you know, it's funny. And I said, oh, is it? And he said, yeah, it's funny. And, you know, everybody else does it. So if you can't beat them, join them. And I said, And I just kind of left it alone. But that's sort of my workplace racism for the week. I'll mute my line.
Well, before you mute, is it all right for me to ask how much you paid for your recorder pin?
This recorder pin was one of the pricier ones. I know they have some for like $30 and $40. This one was about $100. It's voice activated. It records really well. I can put it in my pocket and still recording. I know they have some on Amazon for about $30 or $40. I bought the PIM Recorder Pro, which is around $100.
Okay. You're pleased with the purchase? It's worth $100?
Oh, yeah, I'm pleased with it. It's very clear. It picks up sound. I mean, I can pick up voices across, you know, a large conference room, which is helpful because we have large conference rooms. So I'm really pleased with it. And it picks up voices, you know, even when I have it in my pocket and, you know, I have my coat on and I'm going outside, I can still pick up things, you know, when other people are talking to me while we're outside. So I'm really pleased with it.
Okay. Right on. That outstanding. Going to get information, speaking with an attorney, to know that the Wisconsin state law trumps whatever policy and procedure is at your employer, that your employers have. Spectacular. And outstanding black self-respect when the race soldier was making the racist commentary or just disparaging this non-white worker, and if we had to, whatever he said, if you had to wait for him to handwrite it, we'd have been here and blah, 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 and all that stuff. And he's going to get a big chuckle out of this. No laughter at all. We talked about that before when racists, when they're making these racist remarks on the job about other non-white people, even if it's not racist per se, if they're just making tacky comments and talking bad about other non-white people, even about other white people on the job, I would not participate in that at all. And I would make that clear. I don't do any of that gossiping and talking about other folks because I'm very sure, like 1,000% sure, when I'm not here, it's all kind of nigga jokes about me. So spectacular. And all of us, you can do that just as you are focused, honest about racism, white supremacy, and just paying attention to things on the job, you'll see these types of patterns and just consistent ways that they're practicing racism, mistreating, whether it's you or even just other non-white people on the job, just paying attention. You'll see these things regularly. You can add that to your workplace journal. Other folks dialed in. Thank you kindly, ma'am, for the commentary and pen information or recorder information. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary. Was there a male who spoke up simultaneously that yielded the floor?
Yeah, that was me again, Gus. I'm sorry. I wanted to respond to what you read. What was just said was compelling because this technology they have now called augmented reality, you could get a pair of glasses. Snapchat makes these glasses called spectacles. They're $129. So not only are you recording, you're actually recording the whole video. You get the picture and everything. It's like looking at the world through your own eyes. I'm pretty sure the quality is pretty good because that's what they are, really. It's an augmented reality company. So I see a few companies have these augmented reality glasses, and the whole purpose of them is, like I just said, it has a lot of purposes, but one of the things you can do with them is record both video and audio at the same time, and they look like a pair of regular glasses, some of them. So you wouldn't even be able to tell. It looks like you have on a pair of shades or just a pair of snappy glasses or something, you know. The thing you read, though, that was classic, 101, uncodified behavior, you know, and I mean, no one deserves to be mistreated, but I mean, it was pretty much like, this is America. Like, what did you think? You're not supposed to be in at work defending Obama. That name should just like, once you hear white people say that name, you should be either asking questions or trying to get away from them. And my codification, and I haven't had anyone at this job mention the president other than that one lady who calls him an a-hole. But I'm waiting for, you know, someone to mention him to me because, I'll be like, hey, I love him. Tell me more. What you like about him? I want to know. So that's just my way of doing things. But I'm going to beat my line again. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Thomas in New York. Hopefully she's not a cows listener. Maybe she will, after this episode, the victim of racism and down in Florida who experienced that act of terrorism, hopefully she will get access to counter-racist concepts, perhaps, and make some adjustments, because I definitely do not encourage any of that. We're not supposed to be talking about politics or having any sort of debates with whites about their views on non-work-related themes. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary, you have your own situation you'd like to address, or if you have just suggestions on what's been discussed so far, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, good evening, Gus. 2812 from Virginia. Haven't spoken to you, haven't called in for a while. Had a busy first couple of months of the year, but happy new year to everybody. Hope everybody's doing well. Just a quick story about just me learning every single day. I'm in Virginia, and one thing that I have to be aware of is, and I think I already know this, but it's just a reminder, even when you're dealing with Black people, making sure that you stay out of conflict. I assist and I help with a radio broadcast, and we were interviewing a professor that does some work in the Charlottesville area, allegedly doing work, counter-racism work, that's what she would call it, historian. And we were talking off air, and it's going to fall into workplace race. So we were talking off air, just having a conversation, and kind of found out we're from the same place in New York, and trying to find out we got a lot of things in common. And I had, we're just talking just very casually. And I said, yeah, you know what I miss about New York? I said, man, can I just say something? She was like, what? I said, I miss seeing Black women every day. And she was like, oh yeah, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And you can walk to the store and you can do all these different things. So we're just chatting it up or whatever. And then she says to me, oh yeah, I would just see Black men everywhere. And I'm like, oh really? So, you know, we finished the interview, constructive information, and she was married, and she's a professor. I mentioned that, and I said to her, oh, what does your husband do for a living? She's like, oh, he's a such and such. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Where'd you guys? I said, where is he from? And she said, oh, he's French. And I was like, what? I mean, what? And then she got up and she just left. We shook hands, and so at the end, everybody leaves. She leaves, and I said to the other people, these are all Black people doing the interview, and I'm like, she said she's French. I'm like, what does that mean? And so my the guy that I did the interview was like, he said, I believe that her husband is a damn girl. Why you doing? It's a white male. And I was like, man, oh man, oh man. I said, and I should have picked up on it, because during the conversation, I was mentioning how we had traveled on a business trip, and there were so many. I said, Virginia is just so many interracial couples. And I say, it's just, it's baffling. And I remember looking at her face during when we were talking, when I had said something like that. And after the interview, it just reminded me, I don't even know if it was codification, but it was just like, be careful, not even be careful what you say, but you know, just because someone is from a certain area, don't ever assume anything. And then I even started to question, okay, is this lady, like, how much racism are we really fighting if you're in a relationship with a white person? And it was just interesting, just a reminder of, you know, not to, I didn't want, and she didn't make any conflict with me, which was good. But, you know, because I've been listening to the program and I follow a lot of the concepts of Mr. Fuller in the book, which was, even though it was something I didn't agree with, I didn't pursue it or take it any further, and nor should I have. So that's all. I just want everybody to continue to contribute to the cows. It's a constructive program, and that's all I got, guys. Appreciate it.
Virginia is for lovers. That's what they tell me. That is a key counter-racist principle that at least I've concluded. If you are in the business of counter-racism and you're having contact with other Black people, other non-white people, that's probably going to be near the top of your priority list in terms of minimizing conflict. You have contact. Hopefully it's constructive. If you're talking about racism explicitly or just trying to solve problems, but it's very likely that there will be a difference of opinion, and you just want to try to manage things so it doesn't become an explosive disagreement. Just keeping things moving in a constructive direction. And I guess I would say on that specifically, I think a lot of times or frequently people, that becomes ground for conflict. Like, you know, the person is engaged in a tragic arrangement, and we don't look at that as, oh, this person is a victim. This person is being victimized intensely. That can become grounds for conflict. Well, we just keep going about the business and, you know, keep it constructive, wish her the best, and keep it moving. I think that's real important. I think a lot of times we end up getting distracted from what the main goal is, and unfortunately pushed off into a lot of unnecessary conflict with other victims. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary, lines should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Greetings, Ross.
Greetings to you guys. Greetings to the other callers and listeners. This is my first workplace racism since you've come back on the air, and I'm glad to participate. It's been quite hectic. I wanted to just give a few incidents because some time has passed since I last talked on here, and there's just so much that's happened, but I just want to give a few. First, in regards to using a recorder, I use a USB recorder that records up to 13 hours straight of material. You can cut it if you need to, if you end up recording like your full day, things like that. And I carry it with me everywhere, every single day. I carry it with me everywhere I go. I haven't used it as of yet. I haven't had a need to. just as far as my experiences with this new job, thankfully, thus far. But I think I'm just going to start recording things just to get the office comings and goings, because they have interesting conversations quite often, and I usually have my headset on, but I always have one ear out, and I don't think a lot of them notice that. They assume that I'm listening with both ears plugged in, but I'm always listening to what's going on in the room. So with the recorder, I take it with me everywhere I go. I utilize it whenever, if I'm in a situation where I've had racism practiced on me on the job, then basically anytime whoever it is that's practiced racism, whenever they're around me, I'm recording. If I ever have to have a meeting with them, especially if it's a one-on-one meeting, sometimes you'll have to sit with like your supervisor to do like one-on-ones about your progress or things they want you to work on, or whatever the case may be. So if it's my supervisor, then anytime I'm alone with them in a meeting, I'm recording. And I'll just record every conversation. If it's that bad, I'll record the whole day at work. I just think that it's just good to get in the habit of doing it, even if recording is illegal in your state, just so that your memory is not perfect. So if you are recording, even if you can't use it in court, you can transcribe it. So you get everything exactly the way it happened that day, word for word. So even in states where they don't legally allow it, I would still record. And then that way, if you have to transcribe it, you're transcribing everything that happened and not strictly depending on memory, which can be faulty. As victims of racism, that's something that I've studied, and it's just a fact. When you're under duress, when you're under agitation, your memory can be quite faulty sometimes. So I think that's just a good habit to get into, regardless of what the state law is. You just don't, if it's against the law in your state, you don't bring it to court. You just transcribe it. And then, but whatever the case may be, I think it's a good thing to do. This incident had to do with someone else on the job who... It was just crazy. I'll just explain it. A month ago to the day, my mother-in-law's house had a van crash into it. Black male was the driver. He actually ran into the house twice. He jumped the curb, he tore the fence up, tore the shrubs, and literally slammed into the building. My wife had told me that a black male cop came and a white male cop came in a separate vehicle. The black male cop, she said, looked at her in a way that was pretty much she interpreted as anti-black. She said he was completely not helpful whatsoever. And he just went to the white guy, said, you got this, whatever your name is, you got this, Jack? And he's like, yeah, I got it. And then he just took off, basically. That was it. The white cop was there. I ended up going over there in the wee hours of the morning. And as I was there, my wife was like, he seems to be an okay guy. I was just like, he's a white cop. That's just what it is. I'm just, he's doing his job. Come to find out, we just got the police report, and he wrote incorrect information on the police report. And my wife brought it to my attention because she's the one who got it. I said, that's what I mean. I said, yeah, he was skinning and grinning, and he had a lot to say, and he seemed personable, but yet he purposefully wrote the wrong information on the report. So I said, this is why I think and feel about white people how I do. And I said, this is why I don't care how nice they are, quote unquote. I don't care what they do for you. Don't ever get into a psychological position in which you allow them to fool you into thinking they're something they're not. Know that they are who they are at all times, and you operate as such regardless of what the circumstances are. I said, it's his job to be pleasant and courteous, even though we know that police are slave catchers. But the bottom line is that in that situation, he's not meant to come over there and act a fool anyway, as far as practicing racism and being abusive. So she kind of understood that. And then come to find out, two nights ago, somebody else jumped the curb, but there was a car there that got totaled. And if it wasn't for that SUV, our house would have got slammed into two nights ago. My wife called me at 2:30 in the morning. So it's been an interesting month as far as that's concerned. We're working with the insurance company, and keeping an eye on them too, because they've been kind of tricky dealing with insurance. Like you said, this is not a game. And I noticed that their behavior seemed to have improved as I got involved, versus when my wife initiated everything. So I would just say, for Black females, if you have to deal with insurance, sometimes it's good to have a male there, because in the system of white supremacy, sometimes they'll be also very, very sexist towards Black females and don't want to deal with you or give you incorrect information. But with the Black male, even if the Black male doesn't know anything about cars or whatever, they'll tend to give accurate information in most cases, unless they're really unscrupulous. So I would just say that's been my experience in a lot of different situations. So that would make a good practice, I would say, to initiate and utilize. On the job, oh man, I'm surrounded by a ton of white people, a couple of Asian females. One was adopted by white people. She was from China and was really in a bad situation. She was adopted by two white people. So she's pretty much confused, but she's a pretty pleasant person to be around. The other Asian female, they're both Chinese. She is, I guess, bisexual, and she made that known. Extremely confused and white identified. And there's also about one Israeli female, two Israeli females, and then another white American Jew. And the women in there, ever since this Me Too movement started, they seem to have an anti-male countenance. And it seems from what I've been told that since I started working there, there's a balance I've brought to the office as far as me not hearing them be overtly anti-male. And there's times when I'm not in the office when the behaviors I heard about would happen. So there's something about me being in that office with them that they tend to avoid that behavior. There's one female who used to be the supervisor for my department before I got there. She's one of the main people that was throwing males applications out, like I said, on the compensatory call-in. I'm about to end it now. And she used to be the supervisor. So she's no longer a supervisor. She works in a different department. And she tends to say that she's sick a lot of the time. And she is actually sick, but what she tends to do is use that to get sympathy and extra attention. And she has body issues and all kinds of, she's just psychologically off. And a lot of those people in the office use the service that we provide, which is mental health services via video chat, texting, and sometimes phone calls. So I'm getting to see mental illness as it plays out even amongst the people that are around me, and it's interesting. So with this female, she just can say kind of weird things, but she doesn't say anything to me. I think my aura just keeps her off, which I like it. And I just don't like her. I'm not overt with it, but I think she kind of gets that essence from me when I'm around. I don't say anything to her. I just say hello and goodbye, and I'm courteous, and that's pretty much it. And because she's pretentious, she doesn't resonate with me at all. And I was just like, man, I wish, what would I think? What would I do if I didn't have to see her ugly, pale face for a little while? This was just like a week ago, last week, Thursday. She left the job early, passed out in the train station. People had to wake her up. They took her to the hospital. They said she had internal bleeding and she'll be out of the office for a little while. So I just thanked the ancestors and said, okay, I'm going to start doing this a little more often then. And she's gone for a while and it's pretty wonderful so far, not seeing her ugly pale face. So I have a lot more, but I don't want to take up the rest of the time because I probably could. Thank you so much, Gus, for this program. Thank you for all the other callers because I learned so much from your experiences. I am extremely sorry for those who suffered through a lot of things that I have been through before and I hope not to go through in the future. And I just thank you all for all you do. You all have become like a surrogate family for me because we can actually talk candidly about things that I can't necessarily talk candidly about with anyone else. I appreciate you all. Peace and love. I'll mute my line.
Appreciate that, Roz. Real quick before you hop off, can I ask how much you paid for your voice recorder?
It was about $11.99 on Amazon. And the thing about it is because it's a USB, you can also, it turns off and on by voice. So, and like I said, it can record up to at least 13 hours straight. So if you need it, you know, an extended work day or something like that, you can do so. And then you just, you know, you recharge it. You can plug it into your computer. You can cut it if you need to cut it and all of that kind of stuff. And it's pretty simple and straightforward as far as that's concerned. But it was about $11.99 on Amazon. Oh, Gus, can I please tell one last story? Because this is just ridiculous, the kind of racism. And it is work related, too.
I reckon.
Okay, thank you. I'll keep it short. One of the four females that my wife opened the business with, she was getting things prepared for the opening. This was probably about a month ago. And she's in Brooklyn. She said that she had left the store. She was going home to get some more of her material to bring it to the office to prepare the space. So as she left, she drove past this white man's vehicle. And there was a rainy day. So as she drove past, water splashed up on his vehicle. The white man was enraged, got behind her, followed her for three blocks straight. And as she stopped at a red light, he jumped out of the car, started an incredibly loud argument in the middle of the street at the red light with her. And then he took a bag of dog feces and dumped them on the hood of her car. So she got out. She was enraged. She said, if you don't get these feces off of my car, I'm going to report you to the police. I'm also going to put you in the paper for what you have done to me because you are a racist and you're practicing racism on me. So he argued with her for a little while. When she said that, at that point, he got calm. He cleaned the feces off the vehicle and he actually apologized and then he walked away. She ended up going public with it. She did like a blog post, and I think she did an interview where she discussed it on the radio station in New York City. And it kind of went viral after that just because of how the situation played itself out. But that I just wanted to explain to people too, that something as simple as driving your vehicle and splashing water on a white person's car is reason enough for them to literally follow you and throw feces on your vehicle as a black female. That is just unfathomable, but just understandable in the system of white supremacy. Thank you. I'll mute my line.
Wow. Appreciate that, Roz. If anything, another reminder, white people are dangerous. And I have heard a number of incidents, they want to call it road rage. I know they had Joe McKnight, the football player. He was shot and killed by the race soldier not too long ago down in Louisiana. But lots of these different incidents of whites following a black person for any reason. You looked at me funny, or you splashed water, you know, on my vehicle, or you cut me off, or just it's Friday or it's Thursday and it was time for me to chase a nigger down and you happen to be the first nigger I saw. I mean, just lots of these white people are real dangerous. That should not be minimized when we are out and about. Also, another reason why we should not be intoxicated when we're out and about. I don't think that's going to make any of these situations better either. I'm very sorry to hear about what happened with your mother's residence, Roz. Glad that she was not injured. That is crazy that it almost happened twice. But the seriousness of the officer coming out and not putting down correct information. We talk so much about documentation and having accurate information. God knows the insurance folks, like, man, that can void everything just right there, having inaccurate information on the police report. But it is so critical just getting if there's going to be a police report or if we're talking about something that's in the workplace, having accurate recorded information about what happened, date, time. Even that report that I read where the woman down in Florida, they put the monkey with the noose on its neck and called her a nigger bitch and all that other stuff. The attention shifted from her being a victim of terrorism to, oh, wait a minute, there's a discrepancy on the dates. One of the reports says that this happened on February 21st. Another report says this has happened on February 22nd. So maybe this nigger is making this up. That's where it ended up going to. But that it is so critical to make sure that information is accurate. Look it over. I don't know if it was Roz's wife who saw it or whomever, but kudos to them for checking it over to see, wait a minute, you know, this some of this data is not correct. We need to address this. That can be huge. And that's just another, in my view, all of that, whites do not get the benefit of the doubt, exactly as he said, even though he's out there smiling and looking great, NYC's finest. In my view, that is an act of racism. That is a serious document. You cannot just be throwing anything down on the report and then, whoops, it's wrong, and it's to the black person's disadvantage. That's the other thing. It's not like the information is going to make it easier for your mother's claim and what have you. That's consistent. The inaccuracies are not to the benefit of black people. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, if we have not heard from you, you should go ahead and speak now. Number again, 641-715-3640, code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Any folks we missed completely have commentary?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I wanted to start out with, I was thinking about, there were two instances where I'm not sure of how to classify this. I definitely would classify the first one, because a white woman said it, as an act of racism, but it also happened from an older black male. Like, there's a certain type of comment that was made. Well, the first one was an example of the way the desk, like my desk, and the new black female that started in early January, her desk is positioned in front of mine, and like I said, toward the back, like toward the wall. And the first comment by the white woman, she says, man, it's like y'all and you all in school or something. And, you know, so before she heads through the door, she says, you know, make sure he isn't, he meaning me, isn't, you know, formulating any spitballs like through straws or whatever. So that was the first one, you know, characterizing me as a mischievous child, or, you know, what they call a class clown. The second one was, it happened earlier today. And I think maybe this older black male is probably trying to flirt. I would call it one of the show-offisms. He was, and I know, like you had mentioned about chocolates. It was chocolates on a desk nearby, and he went in to get the chocolate, and there's a variations of different chocolates, and this could be a Wilson moment, because when he reached in there, I guess it said dark chocolate on the wrapper. It was a Hershey. And he said, oh, nah, you know, I don't want that. I don't want dark chocolate. I'm already dark. And the black female, she started giggling, and, you know, well, you know, I didn't find it funny. But he, as he went out of the door or whatever, he left the apartment. He turns to her and he says, you know, well, if he, meaning me, is giving you any trouble, if he's trying to, you know, do something to you, whatever that meant, you know, you can call me, you know, and I'll handle him. Okay. H-A-N-D-L-E, you know, handle. And, you know, he left. So, like, I've been noticing, like, certain comments like that'll be made, but it's not of any surprise, because, you know, I'm black male, so you have these associations applied to me in the system of racism. And the second is, there was a lady with the local NAACP, and I've seen this black female come in before, maybe about a little over a year ago, when the previous clerk was in office. And, you know, she walked in very serious, very businesslike. And my white coworker, you know, she was saying, you know, well, how can I help you? And she was saying, I'm here to see the clerk. You know, she mentioned his last name. And she was like, well, I don't know if he's in right now. And she says, yeah, well, he's expecting me. you know, and she goes back to the back door to lead her to where his office is. And he's been gone this week. He went out of town in the company vehicle. So I'm thinking that, you know, that was an act of racism, you know, for him to be out of the office, you know, and, you know, and based on the timing of her arriving here, I guess she was coming to pick something up, because at my workplace, it seems to be a lot going on in regards to the race issue. A lot of Black people being hired, you know, things being given to Black people, promotions, increased compensation to some degree, but then that's an act of deception in a way, because I know I'm still being mistreated and things like that. And then with the warden, like the warden who got fired or whatever, apparently I think she was trying to get up out of there, you know, from what I've heard, the quote she used is that she didn't want to be a part of a sinking ship. And you have a Black male come in after this woman. And apparently they have an issue with the employee handbook and they haven't updated it, because I asked my supervisor about something, and I was going to detail on this on a later date, but I wanted to share that part about, you know, they haven't updated the employee handbook. They are still utilizing the one from the previous clerk. So they have this Black male over in the civil area, and he's been pretty much programmed to, I guess you can say, mistreat Black people. And there was this one Black female who was trying to get something, I guess something in regards to taking a day off. And she was saying, well, you know, where does it say in the employee manual where you can't do this? And then he says, well, there isn't one. There's an employee manual. You know, you're just going to have to wait on it. And the warden is reported to have said that they are going to suffer some major legal problems, I guess, somewhere in the near future. And it just seems like a lot is going to happen when it comes to that. So I've been paying very close attention to these things. And other than that, one last thing I wanted to comment on, the mental health classes. I wanted to mention that too. I don't know if anyone else on the line has been scheduled to do this, because this was mandatory, because I had to reschedule to do this two times. And, you know, once I got in there, I really made sure that I tried to be as constructive as I can. And it was a lot of white people in the class. And I think they were just looking at me in a very, I wouldn't say odd way, but I don't know if they thought that I could, you know, focus and say the things that I said in that classroom, like the way that I was asking questions and being logical and analyzing video and propaganda and making the teacher nervous. But all in all, it was a good experience. But the main point about it was that I was thinking, how does this support racism? And I was thinking, and he got to a point in the lecture where he was talking about suicide and mental illness. And he said males, okay, are four times likely to, you know, commit suicide. So he slipped in there when he had the PowerPoint, and he said, what are the risks? He said gender. Well, it said gender and age on the board. And then he slipped in there. He says, yeah, you know, the prime risk factor for the males who end up committing suicide are middle-aged white males. But see, it didn't have race on the PowerPoint. And the Black female that was at the table with me, she says, yeah, you know, I was going to mention race. So I had to take note of that. I wanted to share that on the program. And that's pretty much all that I have right now. And just to put that out there about that mental health class, being mandatory, I wanted to share that. And thanks for allowing me to speak.
Appreciate that, caller down in Florida. I noticed that that is a major pattern worldwide, the system of white supremacy, them minimizing racism, specifically anything that's going to directly identify whites, especially if it's something negative where they don't get to brag about that. No, we're not going to highlight and play up the fact. Yes, the main risk factor for suicide, middle age, white males. Generally, that's not something that they're going to try and amplify. I think from there were so many different anecdotes shared. Anytime you're in a workplace where either there is no handbook or they're saying that the handbook is not available or it needs to be updated or you're just going to have to wait till we get it together. Like, whoa, that definitely a red flag. That is dangerous area, because if there's supposed to be policy and procedure or rules that everybody is supposed to be abiding by, and we don't even know what the rules are, or maybe they've been amended, maybe we got new ones, maybe you got rid of some of the old ones. I can't even figure out, you know, how to get my time off. Like, oh man, I mean, that's just an environment ripe for white supremacy, racism, and for them to do whatever they want until, you know, the policy and procedure gets printed out, refined, or whatever excuse they give. With those metaphors, talk about that on the compensatory call-in all the time when they're comparing you to a child, throwing a mischievous child at that, as you said, throwing spitballs, or you're acting up again. Somehow your misconduct, you know, if you're acting up, even black people coming in, you know, if he's acting up, I'll handle him. I think you had called in before where I think you said a different person, white woman, and unless I'm mistaken, was talking to somebody and used you an example where you were the criminal, you were the maldoer. Like, if such and such over here, he's got a rape record, he's not going to be able to register to vote, like that. So to just paying attention to that sort of thing, these are major, in my view, acts of racism. And you can just see constantly you're not portrayed as, you know, the CEO of the company or someone who's making a lot of money or just a fine, upstanding Florida citizen. No, it's got to be, you got to be a child throwing spitballs who needs to be handled, needs to be, you know, beaten down or whatever the case is, or a rapist, just consistently in the way that they think about. But, and these are your coworkers, sometimes even black people, and just the saturation in terms of where even that's the way non-white people, even other black people, that's the way that we think about black people and, you know, speak in the same terms, use those same associations. Let's see if I guess that also, since the white woman who did leave, the former warden, saying that she thinks there's going to be lawsuits and other turmoil to follow, might be something to keep an eye on as well, especially with the handbook and everything else, and your own feelings that there might be some chaos in the coming weeks, months, or what have you. Something to pay attention to. And I would not ignore those signals. I think Mr. Fuller has said before, sometimes the creator will send you messages, signals, and you alone. I know Dr. Kamban, I know he said before, and I think it was on a broadcast, he was saying, and it was about sobriety, that when you are sober and you can think well, you can receive messages from the Creator about things that have happened, maybe things that are about to happen, that can help you not be surprised, not be stunned about things that are going to happen in life. But if you're not paying attention, you're not, you know, you're intoxicated or whatever, you're not paying attention to those signals, you could miss out. Sometimes you do get signals about things that are about to happen, even things that are about to happen in the workplace. Other folks dialed in, if you have commentary you want to make sure you get in, suggestions about anything that we've heard, or if you have your own situation you want to make sure you touched on, line should be open. Proceed. Do we miss anybody? Anybody that we has a hand up that we did not get to hear from at all? Caller at 7978. You should be with us as well, 7978.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am. Greetings, Chantel.
Hi. Hello. I was listening to you a while ago. You mentioned about the discretion in regards to working from home. I don't know if you don't mind. Do you mind if I actually read what that policy was?
Let's hear it.
one second here. I will pull that up. Let's see.
Here it is. Okay. So, and this is just to, you know, this is sent out after the day after when I had asked them, can I work for an entire week? Because it was requested by my doctor and they told me I could work one day. And I asked my boss, well, he's like, either you take a day off or you have someone bring you to work. And I'm like, well, I don't have any more days left. So it's like they didn't give me an option. So I was like, okay. So I came in. But this is what he sent out that day. It says, Cosmolex considers occasionally working from home to be a viable alternative work arrangement when necessary. Working from home is a voluntary work alternative that may be appropriate for some employees at times, and is not an entitlement. Working from home in no way changes the terms and conditions of employment with Cosmolex. Moving forward, the below procedure will be necessary when requesting to occasionally work from home. Procedure. Any work from home request must be submitted to and approved by the supervisor in writing. Depending on the workload and availability of in-office resources, the supervisor may approve or not approve the request to work from home at their discretion. If the work from home request is denied and you are unable to come into the office, this will be considered paid time off if you have vacation occurred, or unpaid time off if you do not have vacation occurred. Please seek prior approval for any planned time off. We understand that there may be emergency situations where advance notice is not practical or possible. However, as a rule, unplanned time off requests will not be granted. And that's the policy.
Discretion, one of the big words that I have highlighted in the practice of racism, white supremacy. I've concluded, particularly in workplace situations, that word discretion is pretty much feel free to practice racism, white supremacy. You do not have to do the same thing every time. Everybody does not have to be treated the same. You can make this up as you go. That's pretty much the way that I have interpreted that term discretion, because it gives so much leeway. You just don't have to be explicit about what the policy is on this issue, specifically with being able to work from home. And the thing is, when you have a policy like that, it's so easy for them to, well, this person can work from home, this person can't. I would make meticulous notes about that sort of thing when you see people are not being subjected to the same rules, because I think that happened in your situation. You said you earlier, that was the whole reason that this policy, this email was sent out. You were denied the ability to work from home. And then you get to fast forward, white person, they get their injury or what have you, they ask to work from home. What happens with them?
Well, actually, what's interesting, you mentioned that. The only thing that has happened, since he's working from home, and I will read it here, they have not mentioned that policy to him. What they have mentioned, let's see here. Okay.
I hear you.
I think she's just trying to find the email.
Yep. Okay. So this was the only thing that was mentioned. Nobody reiterated the policy that's supposed to be followed to him. The only thing, they sent emails to all because you know they're talking about somebody. So what they did was they sent this out, requesting time off process. Please see the link for the process of scheduling time off at Cosmolex. This must be followed in all situations. If there is an emergency or you don't have access to Bamboo HR, please contact your department manager or lead for assistance. Now, the document here says, so this goes, we've had this document for a while, but this goes into, like, how to schedule time off, because in Richard's circumstance, he, I think, took a day off, but then decided to work from home for the rest of the days. Now, I don't know, like I said, with the policy, in terms of the discretion, in terms of how busy we were, I don't know if my boss was like, hey, can you work from home instead of taking a day off? Because it would have been just me and him doing tickets. Now, at the time, when I wanted to work from home, it wasn't busy. So I kind of feel like that should have, you know, kind of went through. Yeah, this policy here, like the scheduling time off, it says here, let's see. Yeah, all out-of-office time is to be scheduled through Bamboo. So that's planned time off, unplanned time off, leaving early, late arrival, work from home. So basically what happened was Richard wasn't following these. Since they allowed him to work from home, he hasn't actually put the information in Bamboo Hire saying he's working from home those entire days. So that's basically what happened. But then no one reiterated to him, hey, you know, in terms of working from home, so it's like you said, it's discretion. So it's more of, you know, pick and choose kind of situation. So
and that,
to me, I don't think that's right at all.
It's racism, white supremacy. In my view, it is not right at all. That's why I said earlier, I would document. I would try and get as much information as you could about those type of situations. Not that you're going to protest now or anything like that, but that can be useful moving forward. Even if Richard were to be fired tomorrow, that would still be useful information, because if this suspected racist was allowed to work from home and he didn't even go through the procedure as it's outlined, like he didn't contact anybody, he didn't fill out the required paperwork, he didn't, you know, contact a supervisor to get all of this approved, if he was just able to do this, then, you know, hey, you're not even adhering to the procedure here. So anytime in the future, if somebody needs time off, it shouldn't be a whole lot of stonewalling and, oh, we never do this. And, you know, you didn't follow the procedure. Well, back in 2018, Richard didn't follow the procedure either, if I recall. And he was able to work from home. So sometimes you all are able to use discretion to make exceptions, right? Still in the question lane. One other thing for Chantel, because you were also having a similar issue with this same guy who was able to get to work from home. This guy was being rude and annoying you in the office, coming up and making noises, asking questions that were not related to being in the workplace. And you were saying kind of with this situation and kind of overall that you felt that you maybe hadn't been as codified as you could have been on the job. Like, you've been listening to this program for some years. You have understanding of counter-racist concepts. You've done your own studying, but you maybe weren't following through on the job. And I had asked you to maybe think about some of the reasons why you were not following through. And you said you had at least two. What were some of the reasons?
Yep. Well, there were two main reasons. Being a non-white person working in the workplace with the majority of white people that are there, I felt like I was looked at as, if I don't try to get along with these people, they would look at me as the black girl that's not trying to, I guess, socialize with us. And I thought that it would make it harder for me to kind of interact with everybody. It is hard now, even if I were to interact, regardless. But that was one of the main reasons. And the other one was being a team player, which tends to be the common thing with corporate environments. So being a team player and kind of just, you know, I mean, still being cordial with people, but then they kind of push it to the point where they try to get you to, hey, come to this party, or, hey, let's talk about this, when you really don't want to talk about that. You're just trying to get your work done. But I do find that for me, when I don't get my work done, like with this Richard situation, I find I come back to my work and I'm like, what was I just doing? So I've come to realize that me as a person, like, I have to, like, be able to, when I'm focused, I'm focused. And my boss tells me that all the time. He makes it seem like it's a problem. Like, he's like, yeah, you're very focused on your work. And I'm like, is that a problem? He's like, no. It's just, you know, we try to get your attention. It's kind of hard to get your attention because you're not, like, you know. I'm like, okay, well, I mean, there's other ways of getting my attention. You can also email me. You can call. I mean, I'm not saying that I can't talk. It's just there's other ways of communicating as well that I might be able to respond, you know. So what I do now is what my boss does is if he's trying to talk to me, he sits across, like a diagonal across. He talks to me, but I can't hear him. So what I do is I either call or I walk over to his desk. That's what I do. I see that he probably doesn't seem to like me walking over to his desk, but who cares? I'm going to do it anyway. That way I know that, you know, I mean business and we're discussing something. I am not going to have a conversation with you where you're diagonal and I can't hear anything that you're saying. So I'm either going to call or I'm going to walk over to your desk. So that's what I decided to do. He doesn't seem to like me doing that. I don't care. I'd rather come talk to you directly. What's the issue? What do we need to talk about? What do we need to resolve? Like to today, you know, he's like, so da, 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 da. I'm like, I told him, I can't hear you. And I walked over to him. I can't hear what you're saying. What were you saying? And then he gets all weird because I'm directly saying to him, I can't hear what you're saying. You're whispering. I can't hear you. So he's like, okay, game plan for tomorrow, you know.
That's even interesting. That's even interesting there, speaking to someone where they can't really hear what you're saying. But even that notwithstanding, the fact that the seriousness, because that's one that we've heard from a number of folks, people that are serious on the job, people that are quiet on the job, they just go about doing their work. They're not throwing spitballs. They're not trying to flirt with everybody that comes in the building. They're not consuming alcohol or talking about all the parties that they're going to have once they get off from work. They're just here doing my work quietly. That, wow, you're so quiet and you're not a team player. Like that is so consistent for Black people on the job having to deal with that. We've talked about that for years on workplace racism. And the one thing I can say with regards to concerns, because you were saying that that was, I guess, a part of the motivation in terms of why you weren't being codified and stopping Richard being annoying, coming up and talking to you about nonsense. I think for non-white people, that is a major concern that has been raised many times. I can only say from what I have seen, I think it would be better to just deal with them saying that we think you're too serious or too quiet, as opposed to not or just going along, accepting whatever they decide to dish out on you at work and seeing where that goes. Because most of the time it ends up being someplace really, really ugly and really, really nasty in the system of white supremacy. It just ends up being more abuse and more abuse. It starts out, you know, just distractions and asking dumb questions. And I mean, it just can really intensify. So yeah, I would say just go with that. Stick with the codification. It's easier to deal with them saying, we think you're too serious. We think you're working too hard. I've just found it's a lot easier to deal with that accusation. Do we have any suggestions, any other thoughts from other folks who dialed in? Chantel with the update. Any other folks dialed in had any comments they wanted to make sure they get in? We nab everyone. Didn't miss anybody. Anybody else had commentary they wanted to make sure they shared?
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Not so much a comment on Chantel's story, but the one thing that I have been forgetting to discuss is with the particular job, the particular plantation that I'm on now, it's really odd how they don't have like a regular training on sexual harassment. Usually with jobs that I've had in the past, they have like the whole video where it'll be someone who is being very overly sexual. And, you know, that whole little thing where, you know, you look good in that dress and, or, you know, your behind looks nice or whatever. They'll have that little type of video and it's like, oh, okay, this is what you're not supposed to do. And if you did want to comment on someone, you know, you can do it a different way or just don't say anything at all. But with this place, they actually don't have that. And when I went through orientation, they're like, well, yeah, we don't have the cheesy video about sexual harassment. We feel like everybody should have a work history here. So, you know, you've already got that from somewhere else. But they did, if I'm not mistaken, and I probably should have checked my handbook, which I'm not completely familiar with yet because I am still new. I feel like they do have something in there about it. But again, it's kind of weird to me that they don't have like a mandatory training to where, you know, everybody knows the, you know, exactly what they expect. And I've noticed that everyone is kind of like touchy-feely, not so much in the way of over-sexualizing or like sexual, but it's like they'll touch people's shoulders or they'll touch, you know, their arm. You know, I personally hate that. And that's already happened to me, but someone who is definitely an upper management. So again, I'm still kind of struggling with that because it with someone being an upper management, definitely there's that fear. And it's a woman, of course, not of course, but it, you know, it's a woman. And that's the ones that I typically have that trouble with. And I feel like when that happens to me, they are doing it because I am, like I've explained before, you know, I do hold myself being just very professional and very quiet. That's all I wanted to add. Thank you for allowing me to speak again.
Appreciate that. Red in Nevada, that those type of work environments where they do not give out the sexual harassment training, that can be a red flag as well. Because I think a lot of times in those training, they don't just tell you like what's inappropriate for the work environment. They also tell you like the procedure, like this is what to do if something does happen. This is who you should, you know, report to or what have you. Like a lot of times they'll go over that information as well. So if they're not doing any of that, just like, yeah, we assume you all already know what to do and know how to behave yourselves and we'll just work from there. Like that could be a red flag. But if it's a touchy environment where you kind of said you noticed that already, that's one of those where it might be good if you just started there to just kind of make that clear that I'm just not a real touchy person. We talked about this before and some of the same issues. We talked about people not necessarily feeling comfortable. You don't want to be aloof. You don't want to kind of seem standoffish if you just started. But I think if you can get that clarified, kind of similar to what Roz said, I think he says when he starts a new job, he just explained that from the very beginning that I'm just here to work. I'm a real quiet person. I'm not real outgoing. And I'm definitely not all touchy in the era of Me Too. And, you know, if people need to do a handshake every now and then, that's fine. But I'd prefer people not, you know, do a whole lot of hugging and fondling or anything else in the workplace. Prostitution is legal, as I understand it, in Nevada, but this is not the Bunny Ranch. We are here to do office work, so let's do that. I'm a big advocate of just making that clear from the very beginning so that way everybody knows and it's not something where they've got comfortable and a touching and rubbing on me and then 6 months later, you know, you're verbalizing that you're not really feeling this. I think, you know, if you can say that up front, great, and just move forward, even if, you know, they kind of resist a little bit, like, oh man, that's just our work culture, you know, we like to have a good time. That's great, and I'm looking forward to being a part of this exciting team, but I just am not with all that touching and feeling this. I can be a great team player without having to fondle everybody in my work row. Other folks that we missed, anybody, any other folks that have commentary, situations they want to make sure they get in before the end of the broadcast, last few minutes, any folks that we missed completely?
Jeff, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, hi, this is a caller in Wisconsin again. I just sort of wanted to bring up an issue that I've been dealing with at my job. I've had this situation now where the lead architect has been trying to get intel on me for
quite some time. So during a kickoff meeting for our new team, he was watching me intently to see whether I would react to what was being said. And I had practiced keeping a calm demeanor prior to the meeting, was prepared for this. He then cornered me the next day and asked how I was feeling about everything, to which I gave the answer, I don't know, I don't have all the information yet and have some questions I'd like to ask in the next meeting. He then proceeded to tell me what he thought I should know, to which I gave the same answer above, and he walked away frustrated. He then attempted to remote into the computer I use at work. He had had the machine named from 3 months prior when I used his laptop to remote into the same computer. Since I don't use the computer at work for anything personal, I wasn't worried about that. However, I was worried about why he wanted to remote into the computer. And when I asked him about it, he said, oh, my laptop just wanted to remote into your computer. So again, there's this, he's trying to get this intel. So then he decided to use the old racist standby of not speaking to me. I didn't respond to that either. And when he finally decided to speak to me again, I just nodded at him and said, morning. So we next had a showcase of a new look for one of our websites, and I sat in the back row next to a UX designer who is one of only 5 Black people in the company. We're cordial, we're friendly, but we're not too friendly. He saw me and pulled the chair from his desk to right behind me and sat there. The Black female and I spoke about the changes to the website she had recommended and designed, but nothing else. We walked out of the room together towards the stairs, and I saw him watching. So I'm assuming that he's, while I'm making an assumption that he's probably going to try to engage this Black female in getting intel. I think he's also using the non-white Indian male as well, who's been sort of watching. He's been, every time he comes to my desk, he wants to see what I'm doing, wants to see what I'm listening to on my phone. You know, every time there's a meeting, he's sitting real close to me, getting in my space. It's a sort of terroristic situation, and I really don't know what to do about it right now other than what I've been doing. But if anybody has any suggestions, I'd like to hear them. Thanks. I'll mute my line.
Wow, I think we've heard from a number of people just this evening. We had the female caller who works at the insurance company who wrote in, and quite a few folks throughout the course of the broadcast just tonight. Where they, you know, are being spied on, where they've got like counterintelligence program operating. And sometimes the people are, it seems, are recruiting other people to go and look at what you got in your desk or look at what files you got on your computer or see if we can, you know, sneak a peek at what you're looking at on your mobile phone. I mean, wow. I would just keep that in mind. I think we had talked about that before. When you're in a workplace, that you should just have that in mind. I'm under surveillance constantly. Even if you don't feel like the caller who just spoke in Wisconsin, think that way anyway. I'm under surveillance. Everything I say is being recorded, transcribed. There are not going to be any secrets. I can't hide anything in my desk. Even the non-white people, since he said, even they might be coming to talk to see what I got on my desk, what am I reading, who am I talking to, what am I working on, to go back and report to other racists. Just think that way up front. It's not going to be any secrets. It's not going to be anything to hide. And I'm going to stand by everything that I say and do in the workplace. I think when you can think that way, you don't have any secret. Like you said, with the laptop, this is not my computer. This is their piece of equipment. I'm going to treat it as such. So I only do work-related material, so I don't care what you do with it. Take the computer, go through it, and look through every single thing that I did on it. You're not going to find anything. Just, I think that can be very helpful. Did any other listeners have suggestions for how you would function in this environment? I think our caller in Wisconsin, she called in for a while saying that she felt like people there were intensely scrutinizing her every move and watching, even though they were saying they were so impressed with her brilliant work in the company. It seems like they're just figuring out ways if they can maybe steal what she's doing, or at minimum, keep very close tabs on her. Any other listeners have suggestions? Any other suggestions? Caller in Wisconsin being under surveillance and snooped on in the workplace. assuming folks do not have a suggestion for that. If you think about it, as we are getting close to the end of the broadcast, but if you think about it, you can certainly share for next week, because I know we do have other people who are working in a similar environment where they are, you know, feeling like they're just constantly having eyes on them, or might even have recording devices on them, audio, video, all of the above, and just automatically thinking that that's what's happening, and you just adjust your behavior accordingly. If you're doing the correct thing, you're going in to do great work, which I guess they're acknowledging in some case for the call in Wisconsin. I don't have anything to hide anything. I would just be proactive in making sure that this is not going from just spying to sabotage, which you were talking about in terms of any type of trying to steal your work or messing things up, any files of that nature. If he's trying to access your computer, that's, I'd be more concerned about that sort of thing. But if it's just we're snooping and trying to spy and what are you doing, what are you up to type of thing, keep that in mind. I would exercise my own discretion about what I say or what I do. And as long as you're following your code, what you're accessing on the computer, what you have in your workstation, that sort of thing, be very diligent about your phone. Don't leave it just sitting around, have a password on it, that sort of thing. Just be very, very diligent in terms of how you function in that environment.
Good.
Yes, sir, Roz.
Hey, yes, I wanted to give some insight on this too, and I'm sorry that you're suffering through that kind of terrorism, because that's exactly what it is. I don't know if you're able to, but if you can, keep a mirror on your desk and use it to look over your shoulder and see behind you and around in your surrounding space that your blind spot is in. So that way, you know, if you get that notion that someone is, you know, hiding or being or snooping around or standing behind you, you can see them, and that way you can prepare. And I think Gus gave you the best advice as far as just assuming that you're always under surveillance and tailoring your behavior and your speech and actions accordingly. The other thing is, I think it's a good idea if you carry like a backpack or a purse or pocketbook to get a lock, like a traveler's lock that you would use if you're traveling on the airplane, and lock your purse. But if you have to step away and leave your purse, you lock your purse. If you have a backpack, you lock your backpack, so they're not going through your things when you're not there. I think Gus was right. Don't leave your phone, because they'll try and, you know, tamper with your phone as well. So those are my suggestions. That they've helped me quite a bit. That's something that I employ as well. I keep a lock on my backpack, and if I'm stepping away from my desk, my backpack is locked. That's something I don't play with, and I just don't trust white people. It's not good, because when you leave your office, most times other people are in the office and they're alone with your stuff. So if they want to do anything or snoop in your stuff, you have no concept. And if they're all working in concert against you, you will never hear about it unless they find something that you don't want them to find. So that's my advice, and I do wish you the best. Please keep us posted on the progress. I'll meet myself.
Appreciate that, Roz. Great suggestions. Anybody else, comments they wanted to get in before we conclude, suggestions, or just any quick comments you want to make sure you get in?
I just wanted to say thank you. This has really been very helpful for me. So this is a caller in Wisconsin again. Thank you.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Just keep us updated and stay codified. It sounds, because I remember you've called in a few times now and talking about your situation. It does sound intensely stressful, as you know, that's going to be the case for most of us worldwide. But just stay codified with what you're doing, and even be thinking opportunities will probably come up where you can ask some good questions. If you've got, you know, all of this activity going on, electronic snooping and other people coming in, probably be some great opportunities for questions. So just stay codified and stay alert in the situation that you're in. I will remind folks, the book club will be restarting not tomorrow, but next Friday. That way I can be decisive and make a definitive decision about the next book that we're going to read, and I can get my mental health day in for Friday. We will be here for the compensatory call-in on Saturday, normal time, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We'll catch up on what's gone down the last 7 days. Folks can dial in, share their thoughts, observations, counter-racist suggestions. If you have a guest recommendation, if you have a question, if you have problem accessing something in the archives or any other suggestions, gripes, feel free, drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. Many thanks to all the folks who tuned in, participated. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. Stay codified bright and early tomorrow morning on Friday when you hit the plantation. Whites, race soldiers, they will be ready to go in the AM. Make sure that your counter-racist codification is ready to go as well. If that includes a recording device, make sure you are ready to record. We'll say again, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. With all of the terrorism that we heard this evening, I don't think being under the influence would make any of those situations better. Certainly, there's a lot of evidence that race soldiers, they have done extraordinary damage against black people, non-white people worldwide, having us intoxicated on all their poisons and what have you. I think it would be a tremendous counter-racist move, even a counter-racist economic move, to not spend a shilling on any of their narcotics, poisons. Let's preserve our brain computer as best we can, so that we can make great decisions, come up with great new concepts to solve the problem: racist man, racist woman, racist child. Certainly, if you're going to be in a vehicle, you want to be sober, whether you're the driver, passenger, even if you are a pedestrian. There are plenty of Daniel Holtzclaws in the world. You do not want to be stopped under the influence at that time. Thank you kindly, and let's also make sure that we buckle up if you're in the vehicle. Let's take every step that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Kyle signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you're so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. A victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.